Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, it's still fun watching the show come alive, the lights come on, the, you know, on the air flashes, you know, big bright red and white, and the theme music hits and away we go. I still get a kick out of this because, you know, it's from sitting at a desk here by myself and then the next second I'm broadcasting to the whole world. This is kind of wild when you think about it. So we are living in Charles Dickens said, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the rest of it I don't remember. But anyway, I do it in that voice. That was Ronald Coleman, an old British actor who was in the black and white version of The Tale of Two Cities. Ronald Coleman used to speak like this, and he had this almost kind of nasal sort of quality to his voice. And you could understand him every time he spoke. He didn't look like he sounded like this. Actually, he looked like he sounded like some kind of a ruffian, but he actually spoke with a rather classic British accent. Anyway, so that's how that worked. So Ronald Coleman. Where did that come from? I don't know. I don't know where this stuff comes from that I talk about on the show. I really don't. It just kind of happens. All right. So a lot is going on. First of all, this is, I'm going to get my notes here. I'm actually going to use my notes today. This might be a novel experience. But March 1st, this is March 1st, 2023. I started radio full-time March 1st of 2017. So this is the sixth anniversary of my full-time radio career, except for a slight involuntary absence, which was not my fault. Someone else bought the station I was working for. But other than that, I've been pretty consistent the weekdays, including a lot of holidays, which has been great fun. So I've loved every minute of it, almost. A couple of things have gone wrong. Double booked a guest once and some others. You know, they were growing pains as anything else. So my first year in radio was a little crazy. Fortunately, Mike Bates had a lot of patience with me at the WBY. We worked out everything that we could, and then 4 months later, I was gone. So it's just one of those crazy. I was just getting the hang of it. You know, we're just building our audience. Things were going great, and all of a sudden, boom. Okay, right. Well, change is good, maybe. But that's it. So 6 years, and I have a lot more to do. Oh, I have so much more to do. Meeting new people all the time. There are just people are coming out everywhere. In fact, it's amazing actually how many people turn me down. You'd be surprised how many people turn down the opportunity to be on radio. I'm not sure why. I mean, how often do you get a chance? I mean, those of us out there begging to do it. It's like military pilots to say, well, I didn't really know what to do. Artillery, you know, F-18 fighters, what am I going to do, right? I picked the jets, and they're like, wait a minute, we'd all kill for that job. What's wrong with you? Or the people like, I was an airline pilot for a while, but I got tired of it. Oh, come on. So for everybody that is bored on their job, that's a really special job, there's like a million people that would take it in a second. That's just kind of how that works. Radio is the same thing. I mean, millions of people want to be radio hosts. Fortunately, now you can do it. Doesn't mean you're going to be a good host, but it means that anybody can be a host. Things like Blog Talk and all the other podcast services allow, and Rumble and a bunch of other places allow anybody to just do this. The hard part is that so many people are doing it, it's hard to kind of rise above the crowd. Although I think we have something unique and special here, and that's what's going to allow us to rise up. And so this is a show about ideas, and my latest idea, as of this morning, about 2 hours ago, is that we need to start over at CPAC. And the rumor is that Brandon is bringing back the draft. Okay, Brandon, is it true? So I've texted a few very important people who can actually do this, right? This is the beauty of where I am now. I actually know people that can do really cool stuff. Anyway, so I've texted the people I know and said, hey, so let's get this rumor going at CPAC that Brandon is bringing back the draft. And I put this on Facebook a little bit earlier this morning. The whole purpose of this is to stop the war in Ukraine, stop them playing. And if anybody remembers Vietnam, and I'm calling Ukraine, the Republic of Ukraine, Vietnam, that the thing that stopped the war in Vietnam was not stopped the protests was not the war ending, because the war didn't end after the protests stopped. The war went on for about 3 years. What stopped the protests was that the draft ended. And I think the draft ended about 72. Or maybe earlier, and the war ended in 75. And so you had 3 years of war that wasn't covered anywhere near as much simply because there was no draft. People didn't have to go. Those that did go volunteered, and there's somehow kind of this fatalistic thing that, well, you volunteered, it's your fault. No, that's not the case. People don't volunteer in order to go sacrifice and die for some stupid cause. That's not why they do it. They do it for love of country, love of citizen, and a bunch of other things that are just unbelievable. But the problem is not the people's willingness to serve. The problem is the people who send them to places they shouldn't go. Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea, Vietnam, Bosnia, Syria. The list goes, it's rather an extensive list. Anyway, so I think the last decent military episode of ours, I think, was Gerald Ford during the Mayaguez rescue. And I always think of that, too, because Gerald Ford did the right thing. He actually sent the military in to rescue sailors of this ship that had been kidnapped. I'm not sure. Was it off the coast of Vietnam or wherever it was? It was basically boarded, pirated, and kidnapped. And that's happened a few times in our history. I think Israel attacked one of our ships, the Liberty. It was a spy ship. But it was still attacked. And I don't know how that screwed up. I don't think that was intentional. But it was a really big, massive screw-up. And, of course, then there was a cover-up. The other one is, what was that ship? The Pueblo. I think the Pueblo was captured off Korea, and the military, I don't think, was sent in. And those sailors were imprisoned as prisoners of war, for a year or more. But Gerald Ford sent in the Navy to the Mayaguez. And the other one was when the Navy, I think, sent the folks in. Tom Hanks made this movie about this captain. Who was kidnapped by Somali pirates, and the Navy went in and rescued him, and basically the snipers killed the Somali pirates. Okay, that's a good use of the military. That's what it's for. And Trump, rather than start an entire war and spend trillions of dollars, killed al-Baghdadi and Soleimani. Okay, so you kill two people with special forces, the war's over. It's done. That's it, okay? That's the fastest way to end it. And so a lot of times, a really good assassination, of one person can save the lives of millions of people on both sides. It's not people that start wars. Governments do. People have to fight them. But it's governments that start wars. And if the government stops wars, then they don't fight. That's what Trump was all about. And so the best thing we can do, I think, now as citizens is to call all the – as patriotic Americans, as America Firsters, as Trump supporters especially, is talk to every liberal talk show you can and ask the host, is Brandon bringing back the draft so we can fight in the Ukraine? Okay. Now, obviously, that's not true. Well, actually, it may be true. Maybe I'm actually saying something that is true, and I don't know it. As far as I know, it's all disclaimers here. As far as I know, it is not true that the White House has plans, as they illegally occupy it, to bring back the draft, which would be really interesting and raise the question, should women be drafted? Well, yeah, men are. That's equal protection. That's what the law states. 14th Amendment, equal protection of the laws. Now, does that mean women should be in combat in all the same places that the world's toughest guys are? No, it doesn't. But it means that a draft is a draft, and you can be drafted for the band. I was a tuba player. In high school, what if I was drafted after high school to serve in the military as a tuba player? Okay, I'll go. Where are you going to send me? Frankfurt, Germany? Okay, I can live with that. And so there's all, just because you're drafted, where you serve, that's the question. And there's no way they'd have me on the front lines. Even at my peak of athletic ability, I was still completely uncoordinated, and there was no way I would be useful to anybody as an infantry soldier. Now, as a strategist, yeah, I'm a pretty smart guy, So obviously, I'm not the infantry material, but I think I don't know, intelligence maybe. At least I'd like to think so. But we'll see what happens. All right. So that's the rumor. So y'all got to get out and start a rumor that Brandon is bringing back the draft. That's the first thing. Second thing is our themes this week. We've got sort of a theme that our society is presently purging all the hardworking men that can do stuff. And the second theme is that all the straight white men are being purged from government. So the most victimized group in society today, the most marginalized community, the minority that is persecuted the most is straight white, especially Christian men who can do stuff. So that's what we're focusing on. So I like to think I'm in that group. I know I'm in the white, straight white man group. I think I can do stuff. So far, I've been able to manage to accomplish a lot of things. So, and what happens is when you take out all the straight white guys that can do stuff, society's going to collapse. It just does because we do a lot of the work. Do we do all of it? No. Are there a lot of hardworking other people? Yes. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the purging of straight white men who can do stuff from both industry, business, and government. That's a problem. So we'll talk about that. Good news is that Lori Lightfoot's out. I don't know how she ever got in. She was hopeless to begin with. I'm not sure which globalist Marxist supported her and why Chicagoans were so stupid as to elect her in the first place, but she's out. So that's the good news. The bad news is that she's going to be replaced by a Democrat. So Chicago will continue down its path into whatever depraved pit it currently is going into. One thing I've been wondering for a while, as I go through my list of little talking points today, is why the Democrats didn't steal the House. Now, we know the Democrats steal elections. We know the Republicans let Democrats steal the elections. We know that the Democrats stole the House in 2018 because they overturned seven California Republican seats to do it. I'm pretty sure they stole the House in 2020 as well. But my question is, why didn't they steal the House in 2022? Look at all the trouble they're having now. Republicans are doing things. You know, I mean, Kevin McDeep State can try and keep a lid on patriotism as much as he can so he can serve his deep state masters, you know, but the truth is that some real investigations are actually breaking out. Some real questions are being asked. Now, the question is, will they be allowed to do anything? I don't know. But I'm just, you know, and I wonder, I like to wonder things that no one else is wondering about. So I'm wondering why the Democrats did not steal the House this time, because they would have gotten away with it because of the geldings, the gelding old party, the Republican geldings. All right, so those are my talking points. We've got about 20 minutes before Wendy gets here. Oh, here's one last point. I forgot this part too. So for those who have been listening regularly, and hopefully everybody is, I've entered a competition. Actually, I've entered Action Radio and me in a competition from this new challenges, whatever website, and with a grand prize of like $50,000, which would be really helpful to me at Action Radio at this time. But the point is that it's one of the category I entered, and I may have entered the wrong category, but nothing really fit what we do. But there's other prizes, so who knows? We'll see. But I entered the most creative, and I believe this is the most unique and creative show in the world today. We have people that are not professional broadcasters. We have folks that are experts in their fields. We have fascinating people from young to old all over the country. We have the only citizen legislature attached to a radio show in the world today. I've checked. There may be others starting after us, but we're certainly with the first, and as far as I know, the only radio show that actually writes citizen legislation and supplies it to all levels of government. Oh, by the way, things are heating up in Australia with the Australian Bill of Individual Rights. I'll have more details for you on that shortly, but Australia, I know you're listening, and this is wonderful. Of course, they're listening by podcast. It's like, you know, 2 a.m. there, you know, tomorrow morning, but it's maybe not quite that bad. No, it's probably about maybe 11 at night. Anyway, it's late for Australians to be listening live, but you never know. You know, stranger things have happened, right? Maybe out in Perth, you know, in the Western, where it's a little bit earlier, but we'll see. Anyway, so Perth listeners, you can always get on live chat and type in and let us know what's going on. I need an Australian reporter. I want a reporter in England. I need a middle Europe, Western Europe reporter. I need a Canadian reporter. I've already got Josie for Central and South America, but it'd be nice to have somebody in Argentina, for example, or Chile, or Brazil. Brazil especially. I'd love to have a Brazilian reporter, you know, if you speak Portuguese and English. You know, an Asian reporter, when you have a reporter in Japan, would be great. Possibly an Indian reporter. I mean, at some point we're going to have, you know, correspondents all over the world. That's the plan. Anyway, so back to my competition. So I ended this competition for the most creative radio show. And as I read the rules again, because I was going to – in fact, Fred Jacobs was the one who posted this, Fred of Jacobs Media. Fred Jacobs is the media consultant who created the classic rock format. So the guy's a legend, you know, and I got to know him by posting comments on articles he was writing. When he was at – he said about 5 years ago, he said, radio needs a brainstorm of ideas. And I said, sir, it's already been done. Here we are. I was back at WBY. And so he's been kind of watching us ever since, you know, sort of wondering, and we're getting bigger, and, you know, hopefully one day he'll cover us in a massive article, probably after we're famous and don't need it. That's usually how these things go, but I'm hopeful. Anyway, so he posts this competition, and what he said, what the competition said was that if, you know, enter a category, you know, do a bunch of stuff, and I gave him a bunch of information, you know, links to the shows, links to the bills, and it's a pretty extensive application. Took me, you know, a couple hours to do. Anyway, as I read through it recently, in other words, I think 2 days ago, they have this 51% quota for minorities and LGBT folks, okay? And I'm thinking, in fact, I even sent a message to Fred. I said, Fred, this is not fair. You know, they're already putting me in a category where I'm not eligible for 51% of the positions. They've already decided that, and this is, in other words, they want a majority of minorities. Okay, so what they assume to be the majority, you know, white guys, isn't the majority anymore, folks. The white guys were never the majority of this country. We just did, you know, most of the work, you know, or a lot of it. Okay, hate mail, fine. All right, but to be limited to only to less than half of the contestants simply because I'm a white guy, that's wrong. And these people, you know, you'll hear that. Well, I haven't heard it lately, but I'm going to. You know, you're a white guy. You've got white privilege. You're, you know, you don't know what it's like to be discriminated against. Okay, here's just the latest example in a long string of lifetime examples since I got here where I've been discriminated against because I'm a white guy. All right. In fact, nobody's announced that a white male was has now, you know, started Action Radio. You don't hear that. All right. So what's going to be funny is when the first black female who does Action Radio somewhere, you know, it's going to be a huge announcement. The first black female is now engaging in Action Radio, the process of, you know, putting citizen legislation in with a radio show. And they're going to forget me because, you know, I'm not a black female, right? So that's how this is going to go. But I object. I'm telling you now, I object to this. I think this is wrong. If you're creative, you're creative. And I want an equal chance to compete. I'm not asking for special privilege like the other folks. You know, all I'm saying is I want an equal chance to put my show against any other show and not have a 51% quota against me because that is wrong. And on that happy note, let's turn to my Substack article. I know it's a busy half hour, but Wendy's coming back. So I'm really excited to talk to Wendy again. So that's always fun here. Is that where it is? Where did I put it? I know I put it somewhere here. You know, I attached it to one of my many articles. So we'll see. No, it's not. Is it this one? This is like, you know, it's live radio. I know. I'm sorry. No, it's not that one either. So third time's a charm. Let's find out. Third time. Let's bring this one up. Oh, there it is. See, third time's a charm. All right. Okay, so I've got a bunch of other articles. People have been sending me articles, videos, and as usual, my standard response is I'll get to it as soon as I can. So I'm in Substack. Substack, the website for Substack for me is gregpenglis.substack.com. And my name, GREGPENGLIS. Okay, so I wrote an article. It's based on a bill I wrote with a friend of mine about a year and a half ago. So the article is titled, How to Get 30 Million Illegal Aliens to Self-Deport. And the subtitle, The Secret Weapon, is Civil Asset Forfeiture. So I'm just going to read it. It's weird reading my own articles. I know it's kind of strange, but, you know, I'll let you be the judge. This article is based on a local bill I wrote with a friend to create an illegal alien free zone, the opposite of a sanctuary city for illegals. We wrote it for Santa Rosa County, Florida. So despite the fact that this is allegedly, I'm moving my computer. Hang on a second. Let me start this again. Make sure it doesn't fall off the end of the desk. But far enough away for me, I can read my own article. Okay. So despite the fact that this allegedly conservative county is allegedly a conservative county, none of our county supervisors have ever talked to me about this bill. Yeah, they've all got it. Okay, I sent it to them. The Milton City Council in Santa Rosa County hasn't either. So neither the Santa Rosa County Board of Supervisors nor the Milton City Council in Santa Rosa County, Florida, in the panhandle up near the top left corner, has talked to me about the bill that I gave them way back a year ago, September. And then, of course, I got the website, writeyourlaws.com/new-santa-rosa-county-florida-illegal-alien-free-zone-act-of-2021. Okay, so it's all there. So you can look it up. You look it up at writeyourlaws.com. You just go to my article. It's right there. Just go to gregpenglis.substack.com. It's the top article. I just published it last night. So it says, or I said, the reason we have millions of illegal aliens is pretty simple. Democrats want illegal voters for their power, and Republicans want illegal workers for their chambers of commerce. This proves once again that the two most dangerous entities in the country today are the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. But I'll deal with that in a subsequent article. Another problem I will deal with later is explaining why every person who, by accident or design, was born on U.S. soil to non-U.S. citizen parents is not, repeat, not, one more time, not a U.S. citizen. Neither are any of their chain posterity. The simple explanation is that the 14th Amendment Citizenship Clause is not geographical jurisdiction. It is citizenship jurisdiction. So being subject to U.S. jurisdiction thereof means that one of the parents must be a U.S. citizen or legal permanent resident who is already subject to U.S. jurisdiction. That's it. So we have to go back as far as the computers can go and restore the correct international citizenship of the parents to millions of people in this country who mistakenly think they are Americans to restore their, quote, citizenship jurisdiction. In other words, responsibility over the country of their citizenship. It's a big job, but it has to be done. What I want to deal with today is massive self-deportation and how to get it for no cost to the taxpayers. You will notice that all of our legislative solutions at Action Radio are little to no cost. They do not increase the size of government, usually the opposite, and they are self-enforcing, often through liability in the courts. This is the case. This case is no exception. The problem for those of us who believe it is our right to live in a country free of illegal aliens, so it actually is our country, is that rounding up millions of illegals would look bad and be very expensive. The leftist media would be all over that. And in truth, I'm not crazy about the idea either. So as always, one must get creative and find other solutions. I thought about the great TV show Miami Vice. Truth is, I want a sport jacket like Sonny Crockett, but I digress. Remember all those Ferraris, yachts, mansions, fast boats, airplanes, and whatever else? What happened if you were a drug dealer? They were all seized under civil asset forfeiture. Now, the problem back in the 80s was that police agencies were seizing stuff they thought might be used in a crime, and people had to prove their stuff wasn't involved in a crime to get it back. This is blatantly unconstitutional, and all police who engaged in this prior restraint should have been arrested under USC Title 18, Section 242, Conspiracy Against Rights Under Color of Law. Now, fortunately, civil asset forfeiture is most often done through proper due process, except for red flag laws, which are also blatantly unconstitutional, and also for, another article. The thing that makes civil asset forfeiture so effective against illegal aliens is that they have no constitutional rights. So you don't have to worry about due process or any of that stuff. Just the fact that illegal aliens are here illegally is a confession of their guilt. So anything can be seized from illegal aliens by government computer, because through federal and state IRS services, property and assets are listed. It's simply a matter of seizing all the assets of illegal aliens, just like they do tax cheats. And again, the system and the laws are already in place to do this. Okay, so let's deal with the hysterical, irrational left whose heads just exploded. Also, the Supreme Court has said that illegals have rights, something they can't do, but did anyway, for example, in Plyler v. Doe. The majority opined that American taxpayers have to pay for a government education for illegals so they will grow up to be good citizens. Then I have in parentheses, enter raucous laughter here. Now, that's nuts, of course, but that's the rationale of Judge William Brennan, who wrote the majority opinion. Look it up. I couldn't make up something that stupid or dangerous to the nation, the Constitution, our citizens, our economy, or our court system. The irrationality of stating that people who can't be here as children have to be prepared at taxpayer expense to be good citizens when they can't be here as adults either is beyond insane. As regarding due process, illegal aliens have no do them. So why is this? The Supreme Court is only supreme to the lower federal courts, not the Congress, nor the executive, or the states. They cannot make law, policy, or regulations. They can't order stuff. They have no power of judicial review, despite a couple of hundred years of its illegal use. And they especially can't order American taxpayers to pay foreign aid to foreign nationals illegally in our government schools. Put the question to anyone this way. How can illegal aliens have rights in a place they aren't allowed to be in? The answer is they can't. It is impossible to have rights in a place you can't be in, and it is irrational to think you can, because you can't exercise or be included in any rights, privileges, or benefits of citizenship. That's why the Supreme Court is wrong on illegals again. Government of the U.S., the states, and local governments have no jurisdiction over illegals, no responsibility for illegals, no protection they can give illegals, and so the only possible legal outcome for illegals is to not be here. Because as a legal entity, illegal aliens do not exist. They have no status, no claim, no ability to do anything legally while here, so everything they do by just being here is a serial crime which started the day they arrived. A note on DACA nightmares. I don't fault them for coming as children brought by their parents. I do fault them for staying as adults here illegally and doing nothing about it. So any DACA illegal past their 18th birthday, still here, is just another illegal alien that has to go. So how do we do this? The first and easiest thing is to check everyone with an individual tax identification number, or ITIN. That is the Bill Clinton creation to get illegals to pay taxes without a Social Security number. Well, illegal aliens can't pay taxes. They can't buy their way into citizenship, of course, but more than that, taxes are paid by citizens and lawful residents for representation, services, and protection. Since illegals have no status and legally aren't here, they can't receive any representation, services, or protection. Therefore, illegal aliens can't pay taxes. All the federal and state IRSs have to do is identify ITIN holders who are illegal aliens, probably almost all of the ITIN holders, and simply seize by computer all their homes, cars, businesses, property, assets, investments, and anything else they have. Start doing this, and when the word gets out, millions of illegals will take their illegal gains and get the hell out of Dodge. Problem solved. Since the feds are actually causing the illegal alien invasion, aided by both major political parties, this is really going to be up to the states and local governments to enforce. Fortunately, civil asset forfeiture is a local law enforcement option. They do it now. So any county sheriff, city police chief, or state police agency can engage in an illegal alien civil asset forfeiture action. Any state legislature or governor could get a program going in any state. They don't even need to pass any new laws, since illegal aliens are, by being here, self-confessed criminals. And here's the beauty of it. This has nothing to do with immigration. Civil asset forfeiture is against criminals to take the means or results of their committing crimes. The federal government can make no claim whatsoever that states and local governments cannot seize illegal alien assets because this falls under immigration. It doesn't. And there is nothing in the Constitution that gives the feds exclusive power over immigration anyway, just uniform rules of naturalization. Again, it's all in the legality, and illegal aliens have no immigration status because they didn't immigrate. They came here illegally. Again, illegal aliens have no status whatsoever. Now that you know all this, it's up to you to share this article with media and government, particularly the county sheriffs, because I have the most faith in them to carry this out. Nothing will change unless you do something. If you want change, make change. If you want your country to be your country, then the illegals have to go by the millions. Take their stuff, and they will leave by themselves. It also might help for Donald Trump to consider an illegal alien census when he gets back to identify all the illegals in the U.S. to make it easier to seize their, I mean, our stuff. It might also help to put citizenship on all U.S. driver's licenses. Well, that should wake you up. It's only been a couple of things here, and we'll be back in just a little bit with Wendy. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. GraceCare saves you both time and money. They provide medical efficacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. GraceCare, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And I am so happy to have Wendy Arthur back, so I want to play her theme and we'll get right to it. When all about is corruption, debauchery, and anarchy, when everyone is losing their way, buried in a mountain of fake news and propaganda, there is a place you can go where beauty and poetry of the mind get to play. Where is that place? Where is that space of wonder and magic? Where else? The Action Radio Art Report with Wendy Arthur. Oh, did I make a mistake, Wendy? Wait a minute. Let me try this again here. I know it's here somewhere. Wendy, W-E-N. No, that's not right here. I'll find it here somewhere. This is all intentional, of course, folks. Here we go. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Well, that's certainly more like it. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on a second. Hello, Action Radio. Yes, God? Yes. Okay. You're glad she's back too. Oh, that's wonderful. And what was that? Marconi says hi. He likes what we've done with his invention. Thank you, God. Appreciate it. All right. God's got you back too, Wendy.
That ain't it.
Hey, Bianchi.
That ain't it.
Bianchi's here.
Gather, young children, you should hear. Good morning. Gather,
the
young children.
The thing that we most
fear. Come gather, and you shall hear of the wise wisdom of Wendy Arthur.
Wendy something rhymes with here, with Wendy our dear. Something. We'll figure it out. Good morning, Wendy. See all the fun you
did? So glad to be back with the crew. Good morning, Bianchi. Good morning, Craig. Good morning to all of our listeners. Oh, I tell you what, this is going to be a great morning. And
good. It already is.
I'm probably not going to say some real popular things this morning, but
good.
Might
situation
step on
normal.
Those, but
it, you got to do it.
Situation normal.
You got to do it.
Got to do it. So the Lord's been speaking to me about the mouth, specifically my mouth.
Well, you're engaging it now, so that's a good thing. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, scripture says, you know, how can, you know, sweet and bitter water come out of the same well?
Huh.
So, it's our mouth is, you know, things come out of our mouth just like, you know, we draw water from a well. So he says blessings and cursing should not come from the same mouth.
That makes sense.
And when we think of cursings, we can think of curses from witchcraft, or we can think of curses, you know, like, you know, not nice language, or we can think of, you know, just, you know, saying you're never going to amount to nothing. That's a curse. And the thing that we speak with our words, God is really, really reinforcing the power of what we say. The power of the tongue is what Scripture calls it. Because it's such a little member of the body, but it causes great fires with just a spark.
Oh, entire wars. mass starvation, millions of people killed. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know.
One
so
jerk
the
with
power
a megaphone.
Of our words
is
extremely weighty, and because we are an information society and we read literally millions of words in the course of a day, and we speak many, many words in the course of a day, he wants us
especially
to realize, yes, especially
your
job, he wants us to realize the power of what we're, I mean, God created everything by speaking it into being, you know, light be, it was, you know, so there are so many things our words create. That's what they do. They create because we are part of God. We are made in his image, and he creates, and he created with speech. So we do the same thing, not as grand, obviously, as what God created. We're not going to create an entire universe like he did. But what we create with our mouths certainly shapes our lives and our world and those around us. So he's really been getting on to me because, you know, when I read about some of the things that are going on, you know, first thing in my mouth is like, what an idiot. Or,
oh, yeah.
You know.
I think I've
you know,
said similar
are
things.
Are you kidding me, God? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And because just when you have think that they've reached the lowest that they can go, oh no, they open a whole nother level, you know, of depravity. So and the Lord's reminding us is we haven't even seen the worst of it yet. He's letting things go on the way they are so that we can honestly see the depth of the wickedness and the evil and just how deep it goes, because we, as bad as it looks right now, we still have no clue how much deeper it goes. And so it's really important for us to watch what comes out of our mouth, because it you're either agreeing with the enemy or you're agreeing with God. Those are your two choices. And it's really important to agree with him, because when you start agreeing with the enemy, it gets that negativity down in your spirit, down in your soul. And then once the negativity is there, then fear can come in, or bitterness can come in, or pride can come in, all kinds of stuff. It just opens doors to all kinds of nasty stuff we don't need in our lives. So the good news is good stuff is coming, but the really bad stuff has to be revealed first so that we can see why it was necessary for the entire dismantling of what
I understand the logic, but you know, it's a lot, you know. And well, a couple of things I jotted down as you were talking here. For example, COVID and Christians, you know, was there any correlation between a strong belief in God and a strong disbelief in government policy? I mean, has that been noted, charted? You know, I mean, I bet you that's exactly the case. That most of the people who are mask-wearing Karens who strutted about protesting and screaming at everybody else, you know, hysterically, were probably not really strong believers in God, simply because they would have known that the government is not God. They're just making this stuff up, and it's a billion-dollar bioweapon marketing scheme. We knew that from the beginning.
We did. But there – well, let's break it down into a little bit, because there are those just because you have a strong belief in God doesn't mean that you are trusting God.
Okay, that makes sense.
Two different things. Two different things. Because there are many in the church who were what I would consider weak in the faith, they have never been taught to actually stand on the Word of God, to actually apply it, to take what it says and actually live by it. So many Christians are attending what I call dead churches, where, yeah, they preach a sermon, they give you 3 points in a poem, you know, kind of thing. And it's like a nice sermon, or it's how to live a better life, how to be a nicer person, how to do this, how to do, but it's never about applying what the Word of God says and what it really says. So, therefore, it's just about going to church on Sunday, getting a feel-good sermon, and hoping that it gets you through the week until next Sunday to do the same thing. Nobody is taught, study this for yourself. Pick a verse and do a word study, and this is how you do it, because this is, you need to know exactly what, not just what the words say, but the entire idea of what God is trying to get across, because the logos of God is really important. It's that it encompasses not just the written word and the spoken word, but it's about what he's trying to get across. What is the idea? What is the kingdom principle he's trying to get across? And you know what? Nobody wants to do that because it takes work. It takes a little bit of effort to actually dig into the Word of God and seeing what it really says. And it's not hard once you actually just learn the basics of how to do that. And it's really important for you to learn what these words are saying, because he's saying, if you understand what I am saying with the original intent, not what's been preached from the pulpit, and I'm not saying every pastor is wrong. That's not what I'm saying. Not every church is wrong. There are actual pastors who dig into the word and actually bring this to the congregation and encourage them to do this themselves. That's awesome. But if you aren't studying the word for yourself, you are depending on that somebody else is actually telling you the truth. And how do you know? It says, test your teachers. Test your teachers with the word of
that.
God. Is what they're teaching actually what I'm saying, is what God is asking you. Because they aren't held accountable for your life. You are. And you have the capability of studying and reading the word for yourself. So you can't say, yeah, but my pastor said, okay, and pastors who are truly leading their congregations in the wrong direction, or giving them a, what I call a watered-down gospel, a false gospel, teaching a false Jesus, then they're going to be held accountable for a whole lot more than you ever thought of, because pastors and teachers and those in authority are held to a much stricter standard according to what God says in his word. And you will be judged on that standard. So, but if you're just, you know, the person who's just learning and just trying to understand what God's about and who he is and his heart and his character and all that kind of stuff, and you are depending on those who are older and wiser in the word than you are, that's understandable, because you're a baby Christian and you don't feed a baby a steak. You got to give them some milk and let them grow into, you know, their maturity and all that kind of stuff. So it's the same thing with the Word of God. You know, there's a lot of grace for baby Christians or those who are seeking and don't even know him yet, but they want to. But different standards. But for those who are mature in the faith and they are teaching others, you better be teaching what God is really saying. You better not saying, well, this is what it means when it don't. That's not good. So now let's get back to what – go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, isn't this what theology schools are supposed to do? Teach people how to get into the Word of God rather than, what are they teaching? You know, business models? What's going on in theology school?
Oh, you mean the theological seminaries are now theological cemeteries?
Seminaries,
not
cemeteries, not
teaching,
yeah.
No, they are cemeteries now.
They are
not
cemeteries.
Oh.
Seminary. Oh.
It used to be, when you went to seminary, you learned the Word of God. Mm-hmm. No. Now you are learning how to run the church as a business.
Oh, it is, I was joking
and
about
how
that business model thing, but that's actually happening.
That is not a joke. That's been happening for years, and they are not turning out Christians. They are not turning out pastors. They are turning out business leaders who are trying to run the church as a business and trying to get butts in the pews rather than teaching somebody about the Word of God so it changes their lives from the inside out.
Huh.
So I am calling them out. I'm calling out all seminaries that are not teaching the Word of God, and they're not modeling it after what it says in the Scriptures. You know, you're going to be dealt with, because God is saying this is the time for the church to be judged right now. He is starting in the house of God, and that means seminaries, that means churches, that means a Christian ministries, quote unquote, who are using funds in all the wrong places. So, yeah, no, that's you're going to see a lot of stuff start coming out.
Well, good. It's about time. You know, I think the church has failed miserably. I think COVID was a perfect example. There was no excuse for churches stopping their operation or separating people and masking them up and doing all the stupid things they did. You know, complying with the government is the higher power to God. They should have been doing just the opposite. Saying that the government is not the higher power to God, that freedom is what God intends. And this is there's a way to deal with COVID and keep our freedom and keep our rights and keep God. And they just totally separate. They just lost everything, you know, in my opinion.
Well, you know what? COVID was a litmus test because it was intended to shut down churches. It was intended to put God underground and make, you know, the government God.
On this
and
show.
We will do as we say. Not on this show. That's exactly right. And now, and here's the thing. It showed those who are following God and those who are following the government. And those who are weak in the faith or who have no faith at all, they're just warming a pew on Sunday. So it's because that's what you do on Sunday. You go to church and you know, put in your appearance and you go to the social club and then go have lunch and go home. So, and I know I'm stepping on toes this morning, and I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. No, do it shamelessly without reservation. Go ahead, step. I do it all the time. I've given up worrying about it. So disclaimers are, I'll give you some absolution here. Disclaimers are no longer required, you know, on the Oh My God Report or anything else that happens at Action Radio. Just be bold. Go for it.
There you go. Okay. So.
Yeah, Pianki agrees.
Go ahead, Pianki.
Man, what did God say about female leaders? Warriors and gladiators, because I hear people talking about this every time. You know, Lori Lightfoot got ousted, and she was running against males. And I say, well, hey, in her relationship, she is the male. But what does God say about female leaders?
Okay, but this is like a whole can of worms, but I'll go ahead and
well, it's probably a separate
this
show.
This has been
it'd be a great topic.
Yeah, it is a whole separate show.
Yeah,
let me just go ahead and touch on this because I have had this, I've been under the thumb of this very thing by pastors and community leaders and everybody else in religion, basically. Saying that women can't speak in church, women can't be pastors, women can't do this, women can't do that. Here, put the ladies in the nursery and take care of the babies. And maybe the young ones in Sunday school, they can teach those. But, you know, not they can't teach men, they can't do this, they can't do that. Okay, I'm calling BS on all of that. So, in Christ, we are not male and female. In the spirit, we are spirit. Here on earth and in our natural bodies, we are male and female. And that's important to denote because we each have our own roles and things that we need to do. We're created for. But as far as teaching, when Paul says, do not allow the women to speak in church, he was talking about Corinth. Only the church at Corinth. Corinth at the time was a major metropolis where everything happened. It was very progressive, very liberal, very evil. And the church, the believers, started gathering together and they had no understanding of what was going on. And the women were very boisterous, very promiscuous, actually, in Corinth, and loud and out of order as far as what most other cities would be doing. Okay, major liberal women and men in Corinth. So Paul's coming in; he's trying to teach them because they were being very loud in the church. And if they had, if there was somebody said something, the teachers was saying something, the women were questioning it out loud and want to know, well, what does that mean? And they, it was causing chaos in the church. Nobody was able to learn because of all the disruption going on. So Paul addressed only the church at Corinth about don't allow your boisterous women to disrupt the church. Don't allow them to speak in church. If they need to know something, wait till you get home and let them ask their husband about what's going on. So you never see that addressed to any other church, just the church in Corinth. So I want to tell people who've been brought up in religion, who've been taught that women are not to teach, women are not to do this, women are not to do that. Can you just kind of bypass, just lay that verse down for a second that keeps women under the thumb of everything else and look at Deborah, who was not just a judge, but men wouldn't go to war unless she was with them. What does that tell you? God put her in that position. Because if you're going to say, oh, you have to obey all the authorities over you because God put them in and God takes them out, which is also scriptural, and that's true, then that means he put Deborah in, didn't he? If he was against women leading, why would he anoint Deborah to be a judge and that the armies wouldn't go to war without her because she was so wise? How about Aquila and Priscilla? They taught together, but it said Priscilla was the one who knew more. In the scriptures, she had studied and walked with the Lord more, yet they went out and ministered together. She was teaching and she was preaching along with Aquila. So if that wasn't allowed by God, you never see Paul condemning that. He's the one who sent them out. So yes, women can teach. Women can preach. Women can pastor. But you need to make sure that you have a covering over you. You're either your husband's watching over you spiritually. You have another pastor or trusted elder that you are receiving instruction from and correction from if you were out of order. But that's the same thing for men, too. Men have to have that same covering. So, yes, women can teach and women can preach and women can pastor.
Yeah, it's interesting that the quote, I hate to use this word, but diversity on this show, you know, in age, in both sexes, in every race, in everybody, every nationality. We had a guy typing in from Holland. You know, we have people from all over the world listening and joining in with us here. And anybody's welcome to call. And it's interesting that the show that has God and has freedom as his two paramount, you know, constant forces is the show that includes the most people. Whereas the government and the yeah. The oppressors that preach diversity are the least diverse, that are the least free, are the least intellectually interested in anything beyond what they say. And so everything's backwards. So if you want to look to where you're not going to find any diversity, look to the people that are preaching it. And if you want to find true, you know, intellectual and spiritual and physical diversity, it's for those of us here with God and with freedom. Anybody's welcome on the show.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if you want to be a reporter, all you
because
have to
God
be
is
yeah. And if you just to be a reporter, you just have to be good enough to do it. That's the only criteria. Be interesting. I don't care who you are. we have a 16-year-old. We have a 75-year-old. You know, we have everybody in between. We have everybody you can think of here. And I don't, you know, I didn't design it. I didn't plan it. I didn't go out and recruit people specifically for diversity. It just happened because those are the folks who are interested in being here. That's my criteria.
And because. And freedom allows for different views. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not where, I'm sorry, you have to toe the line. This is what we believe, and that's what you have to do, blah, 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 blah. No.
Yeah.
You know,
again,
God says, you know,
not on this show.
For freedom Christ died. Let no man put you back into bondage. So just walk in freedom that he's given you. Don't make it a license to sin. That's what he's saying. Walk in your freedom, but don't use it as a license to do whatever you want and then say God's okay with it. No, he's not. So, you know, honor him in that.
Okay. And now back to our regularly scheduled report.
Yeah. Yeah. Now back to the mouth.
No, but that's really important. Yeah, it is. Yeah. We just had a break there.
Back to the mouth.
You know. Exactly.
He,
go ahead, step on some more toes.
He's talking about the importance and the weight of what we speak, because it's, we create things with what we speak. And Julie Green, a prophet out of Iowa, is just really, I love how she says it. She says, if you complain, you remain. Look at the Israelites when they were delivered out of Egypt, who wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. That was like an 11-day trip, okay?
Mm-hmm.
40
yeah.
years, because they complained about absolutely everything. Everything. And, you know, praise makes a difference. You know, the blessing with your mouth and praising with your mouth, encouraging people with your mouth, and speaking what God says rather than what you see. That is what changes things. That's what brings about the good crops, because what you plant and every word you speak is a seed that you're planting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to grow a crop. That's an eternal truth. That's a principle. It's an eternal law that you're not going to change. You will reap what you sow. What are you sowing with your mouth?
I know exactly
whatever
what I'm sowing. You know, freedom,
yes.
new possibilities, potential,
yes.
things that have never been done before,
yes.
Ideas in people's heads. And I said this, you know, before. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, whatever happens to me, it doesn't really matter, because the idea is already out there. There's enough people that know about Action Radio and the concept of a citizen legislature with a radio show that it will carry on. I have absolute confidence in that. And so I'm really happy, you know. But of course, I figure another 30 years worth of work to do. I'll be really old by then. But in the meantime, you know, all these seeds have been planted. Everybody that picks it up, every person I talk to, that's why I get younger folks on the show. Everywhere this show goes, and I don't even know where it goes because there's so many different podcasts. You know, every once in a while I do a search. The word's getting out there. And again, Australia's picking up right now too. They have an interest in our Australian Bill of Individual Rights. So it's happening. It's already happening. You know, God's spreading the word for us, and it's really great. I just happen to be here at a microphone and a computer, and we have the technology to broadcast, you know, to the world what we're saying here. So it's amazing.
Yeah.
The best of times and the worst of times. So that's the good news.
Well,
with the things
and
that are all going wrong.
Say,
yeah.
You know, is that Action Radio is about action. And yet we're not going to sit here mm-hmm. and complain. There are 50 other radio shows and television shows out there that do nothing but complain about what's going on, but they don't have the solutions to it. And that's when Mike and I hear yet another piece of stupid legislation that's you know, coming down the pike, making it legally a law that if you're a Christian, you're a domestic terrorist. That's in the works. So instead of us saying, I can't believe that idiot's doing this and that, no, that's not speaking. That's allowing negativity into your spirit and mm-hmm. allowing that open door to more crud to come in. So what we say is not going to happen in Jesus' name. We call that down. We declare and decree in the name of Jesus that this is not going to pass. This is not going to happen. That, you know, people will walk in their freedom and their faith and their freedom to do so. The Constitution will be upheld in this country. And So mm-hmm. that's what we speak. That's the word of God. Okay, and his ideas of freedom to speak that. So it's not like you have to be quoting scripture, but you have to understand the law of God and all the laws of God, and quote the ideas of coming against things that are not of him. So that was just a small example of what you can do, of mm-hmm. how you can speak, what the power of your words are, because declarations yeah. and decrees are legal terms, and you have to understand that everything is being seen and heard in a court of heaven that we don't see here, but it is very active. And to me, the spirit realm is much more real than what we're walking in down here, but because that's where things happen. Nothing happens here in the natural unless it happens in the heavenlies first. And there is great warfare going on in the heavenlies, great warfare, mm-hmm. not just in the courts, but literally between the demonic realm and the angelic, God's angelic realm, that they are literally fighting over territories and people and souls. So, and yeah, you know, and once you understand that, you understand the why it's so important to God what we speak down here, because your mm-hmm. kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. So that's our whole goal is to make sure the kingdom rule and all the good things in the kingdom are in operation here on earth. As as much as our sphere of influence, because everybody has a sphere of influence and has the capability of bringing that down here once they understand the principles. So what we speak is very, very important, and that's where we're at today. So I hope that's something to think about today and to maybe put into practice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we try to do that every day here. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, let me scroll down here. And where is my – here we go. See, they're listening to you, Wendy. You're being heard. I got more buttons here. I got so many buttons. I can do all kinds of great things. Let me give you another one while I'm at it. That's the guys. Those are the guys who are cheering for you, too. But you think of – so glad to have you back. The world's most infectious laugh. I have you back just to get you laughing, and then, you know, it makes my whole day. But you think about words, and think about what we say here. You know, Action Radio, I'm not trying to blow my own horn here or all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, it started with one person with one idea. I had nothing. I didn't have a budget.
Yeah.
You know, this is all created literally, you know, by God from nothing. There was no investment. There was no, you know, major capital. There was no affirmative action. There was no scholarship. There was no grant. There was nothing. This literally came from nothing. And I got a job.
People don't really understand the sacrifices you made to make this happen. I remember those early days. I mean, wow.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not doing this because it's not about me.
To make this happen.
Yeah. It's not about me, but it's right. Just the whole point is people say, what can I do? I'm just one person. I know what one person can do. I'm doing it. You know.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
From nothing, from just an idea. So an idea is your capital with God. Ooh, can we write that down? Ideas are your capital with God. Put that down. There's a show for you. Yes. Go ahead. What do you think?
God gave you the seed as an idea,
yeah.
And you watered it, and you worked it, mm-hmm. You know, and he's blessed that. So, so with my words, I would just like to bless everybody in our listening audience today in the name of Jesus, that you would have his heart peace, that you would have encounters with him today in unexpected ways, that you would understand him better in Jesus' name.
Thank you. I suppose you have to go, which is too bad. I like having you on the show. Welcome back. Glad to have you. And if you ever need time off again, just let me know. But you add so much. It's incredible what you do for this show and for me, you know, personally to do what I do here. So we're definitely a team.
All right, guys. Okay. You have a great day.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye.
Bianchi, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's great.
Okay. You got a cold? You sound a little under the weather there.
Yeah, I had something floating around. I told you I went to my Asian car repair, and I probably ran into something I had never seen before.
Got the Asian flu? Something like that, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, this is the beauty of being a tour guide, was because as a tour guide, you know, I met people from all over the world. And so every bug, you know, every aerosol, every you know, every sneeze and cough from the hordes of people that were down at Fisherman's Wharf, you know, and I used to drive the tours, the cable car, motorized cable cars and the duck tours. And we met everybody, you know, in mask. It was great. And we weren't masking. We just, of course, nobody ever heard of that then, right? We just thought that was for certain Asian countries, you know, where they put masks on. We never understood that. This doesn't work. Anyway, it's kind of funny. But it's good to have Wendy back. I don't want to take a break. I just took a break. I don't know if I want to do another one so quickly here. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. So let me get what's on your mind. Then I want to get back into our discussion that we were having. The two themes, as I talked about, in the first hour was kind of blistering. So if you missed, there was a whole flurry of activity. I went over my article, How to Get 30 Million Illegal Aliens to Self-Deport. I talked about our basic theme here that they're getting rid of, you know, industry and business are getting rid of all the hardworking guys who know stuff. And government is getting rid of all the straight white guys. And so if you're a straight white guy who knows stuff, you're the most victimized person, the most marginalized person in the most marginalized community today, as you're being told that you're the one who's oppressing all the other communities who are advancing because they get the special government privileges. So it's really an interesting contradiction. So that's why I'm kind of focusing on that, that you get rid of all the guys, and especially the straight white guys, that do the work and know how to do stuff. You know, everything's going to collapse. And you see that with airliners that are almost running into each other, with building problems, with, you know, train accidents and everything else. You know, it's not going to work. I mean, how many countries, you know, work on a diversity model? I don't think any, you know, that work. And most countries are corrupt. Most countries have hierarchy. Most countries have an aristocracy. You know, you get to be a ship captain or an airline captain or a governor of a province, not because you have any inherent ability. It's because you're born into the right family. Well, that's no way to run a country. And yet that's what seems to be happening here. We're adopting all the worst corruptions of the rest of the world and still calling it freedom. And it's not working. It's simply not working. So, Pianki, what do you think about all the guys that know how to do stuff? It's an issue.
Yeah, it is an issue. What's going to be done about it?
Well, that's a good question. That's probably next week's show. Let me continue to outline the problem here. While I'm at it, let me just play my remaining announcements here. We got Diane Warner coming at the top of the hour. We're going to talk election integrity. There's a huge scandal in Arizona. It is far worse than anybody could have possibly imagined. So I'll just play my normal stuff here. Back in about 3 minutes.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine.
Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. And we are back. I've got Bianchi on the line, and I've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. And we're pretty much open game for the balance of this hour. And then, of course, Diane Warner is going to be at the top of the next hour with our election integrity, medical freedom report, wherever she wants to go with that. But again, there's a lot happening. So let's get back to our themes. And again, we have two themes here. One, that the guys who know how to do stuff are being dumped. And the other is that white guys are being kicked out of the government. And this just seems to me irrational. I don't understand it. It makes no sense. And yet that's what's going on. All right. So I got a couple of different articles. I want to start with the guys being kicked out of everything. Apparently the Equal Rights Amendment is back. And I think it's a good thing because the Equal Rights Amendment, men actually come out much better in the Equal Rights Amendment if it passes again. And everybody says it's going to be about men on women's teams and guys going to women's bathrooms. That should all be illegal. And the Equal Rights Amendment really has nothing to do with that, because equal rights do not, mean that you can do anything you want. Just as the Second Amendment, guarantees that the government will not touch the right to keep and bear arms, but if you use them, there are legal and illegal uses. Same thing here. Just equal rights means the right is protected, not all your activities are protected. And people seem to fail to understand that. But one of the big claims is that women earn 70 cents for every dollar a man earns. That's not entirely true. What's true is that if you take all the working men and all the working women, men earn more money because they work harder. They're more ambitious. And that's what the study, found, is that guys work harder. They don't take as much time out for kids. And they sacrifice other things. They take on jobs that pay more money. They take on things in college that pay more money. That's what happens. And that's just how it works. So let me get a couple of articles. I see which one we'll start with here. Let's start Men Hard at Work. And this is called Public Health Post. And this is, it's a little, and they fuzz out my, why'd they fuzz out my chart? Weird things happen on the internet. See if I get a little, there it goes. Now it's a little clearer. Number of occupational injury deaths in the U.S. from 2003 to 2018 by gender. Guess who died more, men or women? Men, by a factor of 5 times. Well, actually, no, looks more like 50 times. So in 2003, women who died from injuries at work were 446. Men was 5,129. let's go up to 2018. 413 women died of injuries at work, 4,837 men. So who's out there doing the dangerous jobs? The guys are, obviously. So if you're throwing away your working men, if you're throwing away, if you're living for diversity, you're going to cause, the reason the country's falling apart is you're diversifying out the people that know what's going on. Article says, I'm going to get you a date on this here, June 9th by Gray Babs, B-A-B-B-S, and the website is Public Health Post. I find stuff everywhere. It's all about asking the right questions. So he says a staggering 23,000 people died of work-related injuries in 1913. Thanks to labor unions and protections established by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, workplace deaths occur only at 5% of the rate they did in 1913. See, that's a good thing, right? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lauded the 20-fold reduction in workplace deaths as one of the great accomplishments of the 20th century. It was common for people to die, walking across open steel. I mean, Bianchi would know about this, on construction sites. And that's why a lot of construction companies employ Mohawk Indians, because Mohawks have no fear of height. I've talked to guys that work on the Golden Gate Bridge. They're up there in the wires and in the cold, and they love it. It's great. It's excellent. They have no fear of heights. None. And certain people just don't. I don't have fear of heights in an airplane. I do on a stepladder. Go figure. Okay. That's why I was a flight instructor and not a home repair person. because simply I don't feel comfortable on a stepladder. I have no problem being in a biplane, open cockpit, upside down. I just don't. It's kind of weird, but that's how we're all built. Anyway, back to the article. Even with the significant strides made to reduce workplace fatalities, 5,250 U.S. workers died in 2018 because of occupational injuries, and 92% of the workers who died were men. The gender disparity in workplace fatalities has remained steady for the past 30 years. Why do so many more men die than women? This is first and perhaps obviously more men than women work in the fields with the highest rates of occupational injuries. The occupations with the highest rates of death are loggers, fishing workers. You guys ever seen The Deadliest Catch? Okay. Aircraft pilots. Well, that's interesting. I didn't think that was such a – I thought being a pilot, I didn't think it was that dangerous. But they're probably talking small planes. Read my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. You will be a better pilot. You will more, think better, and hopefully the whole purpose of writing that book was to reduce the injury and fatality rate of pilots, especially private a smaller plane commercial. Anyway, it says the workplace fatalities in these, the other one was flight engineers and roofers. That's interesting. The workplace fatalities in these professions are caused by falls, exposure to harmful environments, and injuries by work equipment. Differences in choice of profession explain only part of the disparity in workplace deaths. Over 40% of all work-related deaths are from transportation incidents. This statistic aligns with a larger trend that over twice as many men as women die in motor vehicle accidents each year. I didn't know that. Homicide and suicide are the third leading cause of workplace deaths. Nationally, 77% of homicide deaths and 79% of suicide deaths are men. The ways that people, get hurt on the job offer insight into the state of men's health. Overall, men in the U.S. are three times more likely to die of injuries than women. The gender disparity in workplace deaths cannot be attributed to biological differences between men and women. Rather, gendered norms in job choice and behavior place men at risk in and out of the workplace. So the reason I cover this article is because if you're going to be a 50% female workforce, it's not going to work. Those jobs aren't going to be done. And so this is just fascinating stuff. It all goes to the whole idea that if you throw your guys away, it's not going to happen. It's just not. All right. So let me see. I had an article here. Here we go. Here's the one that I had to backtrack a bit. My website lost. Another website, Fast Company. Do men really work harder than women? This is from September 10th of 2003. So you can't write this stuff now. It'd be boycotted, banned, get restricted, censored, kept off the internet. But for some reason, it's here. So do men really work harder than women? That seems to be the conclusion of a couple of researchers at Stanford University's Business School. Their study, published earlier this year, concluded that there are no significant differences in income, promotions, or job satisfaction between professional men and women. The reason why more men are in higher positions and earn more money is quite simple. Men work harder and are more ambitious. I found this fascinating too, and this is by the Fast Company staff. It says that seems to be the conclusion of research at Stanford University Business School. Oh, that's, they just read that quote. Okay. Researchers Charles A. O'Reilly III and Olivia A. O'Neill, see, they got diversity, right? Found that the paucity of women, that's a great word if you can work that into conversation, the paucity, in other words, shortage, women in top corporate jobs does not suggest any sex discrimination. The picture is one of individuals who are making trade-offs between flexibility and career attainment. At the highest organizational levels, players are typically quite similar in terms of their ability. Those of lesser skill have been eliminated. At the highest levels, what differentiates the winners from the losers is not ability, which has been equilibrated. That's an interesting word, but effort, how hard the contestants are willing to work. Individuals who are more loyal, work longer hours, and are willing to sacrifice for the organization are advantaged. Success is not limited to males, but is dependent on choosing to play in the tournament. Women, more than men, face difficult choices, especially in the work-life balance domain, they write. In this sense, their careers, more than men, reflect complicated choices. Insofar as we define careers narrowly in terms of promotion and income attainment, any person, male or female, who chooses to put in less effort is likely to be disadvantaged. In our view, this does not constitute a failure, but a choice not to play that particular version of the career game. The men who don't do as well in the workplace happen to be more feminine, just as the women who do worse happen to be more masculine. Well, that's interesting. As this report states, masculine-identified males are more likely to report working longer hours, attach more importance to achieving promotions, be more willing to relocate, and less likely to be voluntarily unemployed. Does it really come down to the fact that men simply work harder and are hungry for success? What does everybody think about this really provocative conclusion? I don't think it's really provocative at all. I think it makes sense. Bianchi, you can't change basic biology, and I will say one point that the reason a lot of men can work harder and longer hours at the job is because they do have a partner, that is doing other things that allow them to do that, either taking care of home kids or working a part-time job or working a job that doesn't take as many hours and allows these guys to do that. So if that's your partnership, if that's your agreement, if that's your marriage, more power to you. I think there are also women who are able to work longer hours and achieve more success and are better at that because they got a guy or their partner is, allowing them those extra hours. And they don't have to do everything that us single people do. Single people have to do all our cooking, all our laundry, all our maintenance of cars, things. And, we have to take care of everything. So I can't work as much as I want at Action Radio because I have to do basic things because I'm a single guy. Well, that's a choice. because there are benefits to being a single guy. Yeah, there's a lot of other things I don't have to do. Anyway, but I think these folks that are messing with the basic biology, that are requiring, quote, diversity, that are doing all these things that they think they have to do, you know, in order to make the workplace, you know, all population representative, are missing the point. It's simply people, human nature simply doesn't work that way. I think they're making a huge mistake. So that's what I have to say about kicking men out of the workplace. Getting rid of the guys that can do stuff. Bianchi, got a comment? And I got some other articles here. So I'm going to drag you back to the microphone.
No, you know, it's a good point you make. Women are limited by her. Females are limited by their capabilities, their who they are, structure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lower the bar, yeah, you would get more to accomplish. But if you raise the bar where it should be, that would be a great difference. See, they do things nowadays, especially like in the military,
yeah,
to comply. And it's political. It's political. And it's a self-degradation, really. So I don't know what to say about it.
Well, it's interesting. They're trying to. It all goes to this utopian thing that we're all equal, which when we're not, that we can all do the same things, which we can't. I mean, this belief that men can get pregnant is absurd. It's irrational. It's insane. And yet people are doing that because it conforms to their ideology that we're all equal when we're not. You know, people, I guess they fail to notice the basic differences. Men and women are different. There are only two sexes, men and women, male and female. That's it. You can make up stuff, but it's not going to change. You know, just because your perception is wrong doesn't mean you can't change reality with a wrong perception. And there's just certain realities of the world that the women have children, you know, and thank God they do, or there wouldn't be people around. You know, the species would have been ended a long time ago. But on the other hand, guys have a place too. You know, we're the ones, you know, you take most of the dreamers, most of the crazy ambitious people, most of the explorers, most of the pioneers, you know, most of them are men. You know, because men have a stronger desire for freedom. You know, I've said for a long time, women feel, you know, free when they're secure, and men feel secure when they're free. You know, our freedom is our security, the ability for me to pack up and come to Florida and start an entirely new career when I got a job here. You know, some people would have done that. Oh, I'll be too far from my family. I'll be this, I'll be that. It's, you know, I want to stay secure. It's risky. Well, that never entered my mind for a second. I thought, hey, I got a job in Florida. I'm going, you know, I didn't care. It was 4 months after open heart surgery. I packed up my U-Haul over 2 days slowly, you know, and started driving. And fortunately, I had a friend just in case, but, you know, there was nothing going to stop me, you know, and I think a lot of other folks would have made a different choice, especially those that want more security. I don't know how many women would do that. I'm sure there are some, but I don't think I think more guys would do that, would take that kind of a risk. And so you need that risk. There was something I remember reading a while ago that the reason that all the matriarchal societies died out was because they were too comfortable. You know, they had too much security. They never advanced. You know, they were quite happy the way things were. You know, it's like when you hear, you know, don't make waves, don't try this, don't be ambitious. That's what I heard growing up. You know, you're not going to accomplish anything. Don't even do that. Mostly from my mother. She was wrong. I knew she was wrong. You know, so, you know, but I have to, that's a demon I have to fight. But how many guys are being told by, you know, girlfriends, don't do that, don't try this, you know, whatever. Or how many girlfriends are told by guy friends, the same thing. So it really works both ways. But overall, I think men take on more risks. We just do. And without those risks, that's why patriarchal societies, male, you know, quote, dominated societies advance. Because men want more freedom. And men are willing to take more risk and more chances and advance. And that's what we got out of matriarchal societies. How's that for a thought, Bianchi? See if we can bring him on. If not,
that was promising. I might have to leave you for a little bit. I've got to go take my car to the doctor. So.
Okay. Well, come on back. You know, call back in when you can, or just unmute yourself. I'll wait for you to... I can just leave your line live if you get a chance to call in. All right. Anybody else wants to join us? We got live chat. We've got let's see if anybody's on. But a Dutch person that checks in with live chat a lot. New person on live chat. Join the conversation. So Ron, you know, feel free, type in a message. I'll get you in a little bit. Because I can't see live chat while I have an article in the screen. I gotta kinda move stuff around a little bit. All right. Okay, so we've covered, you know, getting rid of the guys that know how to do stuff. The next thing I want to cover is the government of Barack O'Brandon. I keep coming with new names for it. The government of Brand Obama getting rid of white guys. And one of the reasons that this comes about is because of this myth of white privilege. And I've done this on the show before. I'm going to do it again. So New York Post, Rav Aurora, A-R-O-R-A, Aurora, Rav Aurora, who's, I don't think, a white guy. He says the fallacy of, see, white guys can't write about the fallacy of white privilege. That's one of the rules that exist today. It takes, I think he's Indian. No, I think he's Sikh. If I look down the page, yeah, I believe he says he is Sikh, which is interesting. Seek and you shall find. All right, sorry. The fallacy of white privilege and how it's corroding society. Once again, you can't get rid of the white guys and expect society to work. It's not going to happen. Get rid of the white guys and government doesn't work. I'll point this out again. You know, look at the Trump administration. There's a lot of white guys in the Trump administration. We had low inflation. We had energy. You know, we had a good foreign policy. We had a strong military. You know, we had all kinds of things happening. We had the Abraham Accord. We had an amazing amount of stuff that was happening, and most of it was done by white guys. So you throw out the white guys, what do you got? You got diversity, but you get the O'Brien administration. All right, let's get to the article. It says, last month I retweeted a comment by a contrarian writer who questioned whether racism was to blame for the spread of coronavirus, and a close white friend responded to me with a well-meaning text. And this is from July 11th of 2020. So this is right. It's actually when COVID ended. We switched from reporting death. The CDC switched from reporting deaths to cases. So just give you a little context of where we are. It's pre-vaccine injuries by about 5 months. This is right 2020, you know, at the height of coronavirus, so people thought, even though it was actually going right. So he says, a white friend responded to me with a well-meaning text. I feel it is my calling to help end the oppression people of a color like you face in our society. I understand I have white privilege, and that has consequences. What a wimp. Jesus, what a weenie. You know, I hear white guys saying stuff like this. I just want to cringe. I'm sorry. Article says, his message left me feeling bewildered. What oppression had I actually faced? And what privilege had society conferred upon my friend because of his white skin? Growing up as a Sikh, that's S-I-K-H, turbaned boy, a Sikh turban boy in the majority white environment of British Columbia, Canada, I was a constant target of bullying throughout my elementary school years. On bus rides home, I remember having to sit in the back where the older, cool kids hung out, and they used to jump up and slap the top of part of my turban. I was constantly harassed with comments like, go back where you came from, and you don't belong here. So I heard that when I got to the South. It's kind of interesting. That's another story. He says, upon immigrating from India when I was 4, my family suffered tremendous economic hardships and cultural challenges. My mother drove a taxi at night, and my mom worked many menial jobs as a cook, house cleaner, barista, that's a coffee maker, and motel cleaner. It's fair to say my family never had success handed to them on a silver platter, but more than a decade post-immigration, we have found our footing in Western society, with my dad making nearly 6 figures operating a stock company. See, hard work works. I know that. I do what I do. Hard work works. All right. Looks like Ron says, hello, Ron. You know, feel free to type in more messages. I've got a call here. Don't recognize the number. Let me take a look real quick. Let's see if I know who this person is. I record by the calls in. So it's a new caller. So new thing you can do is get a live chat account and hop on there and give your first name and what you want to talk about and things like that. So let me just write your number down here. I never give away numbers, by the way. They're held in strict confidence. But it saves me a lot of screening time if I know who's calling in. Log here and see if I'm expecting this call for any reason. I don't think so. Nope, didn't think so. Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do is, let me see if our new person will sign in live chat. Give him a couple minutes to do that. it is you. Oh, okay. All right, well, let's see if we type, Ron, so just type in your topic and question, and then I'll get you on the air. So that sounds good. Okay, so this is how live chat works. Actually, this is how live chat is supposed to work. Okay, so what you do is, if you're a first-time caller and you don't have your number, so I don't know who you are yet, then go to live chat, type in your first name is all I really require, and then where you're calling from, and do your topic or question. And then if it makes sense, then I'll take you on the air. Actually, this sounds like a pretty decent person. Let me take him on the air anyway. So let's hear from Ron. Hey, Ron, you're on Action Radio. What you got for us?
How's it going?
You're live. You're live on the air worldwide.
Ethan.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Ethan, okay.
I'm the host. I'm a radio show host too myself. I have a podcast.
Oh.
And I'm all over the place. So,
are you Blog Talk Radio, or what kind of, where do you host your show?
Well,
you can plug
Blog
my show.
Talk Mixers, a Blog
okay.
Talk Speaker, Mixler.
What's the name of the show?
Crazy Nation Radio.
Okay.
Crazy Nation Radio, yeah.
What can I do for you? Now, of course, you have to plug my show on your show now. I mean, that's how this works, right?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Not a problem. I'll sell you. No, man, you're bringing up the fact of white privilege, okay? Me, myself, as a Caucasian white man, I have not got the instructions on what kind of privileges I really have. So that's what I'm kind of looking for, to see what these privileges I have, what can I do? You know, I mean, where's the benefit to this, you know? You know, my show's on at late night because I'm very, you know, I'm pretty rough. I mean, I'm going to keep my cool on your show because, you know, I respect.
Well, we don't swear on my show, but you can be controversial. I just don't want to have unnecessary, gratuitous swearing because I don't think it adds to conversation. But we get extremely controversial here. But we're just very logical, rational.
I use words and people don't like it. That's why I'm being cool.
I appreciate that.
It's not being mean to anybody in particular. That's not what I do. I talk politics. So politics and law, that's where I cover. And it's, you know, I've been in this game for 14 years. Okay, I've been radio. I was on radio before that, blah, blah. And I got pushed into Blog Talk Radio. Somebody say, look, man. You know,
yeah, me
you
too.
Do this.
there
you go, brother.
And we all got kicked. I understand. Okay, so what's your topic?
Right, so I got to
let's get back to this.
So the thing is the white privilege, and that's my topic. What is it? I just hear the words, which is under the First Amendment, is legal. Any word is legal. It doesn't matter what the word is. Words are words, and that's that. But then, you know, we can go on further in this thing, not only the white privilege, but also now the new, you know, the genders. I mean, I covered this topic on my show, the genders. There actually, in the reality of the world, in the reality of the world, there's only two ever. There's never going to be no others. But they claim 72. So that's kind of again, 72 different things.
Let me just hold you up for a second here, because that gets to my point, that you cannot change reality because your perceptions are wrong. So you can claim 72 genders, there's still two. You know, you can claim a thing as gay marriage, but marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, you can claim all kinds of things, but it doesn't make it real. And so let me get to the heart of white privilege, because we should really talk about that. I want to kind of focus. We've only got till the top of the hour here. I want to talk to you. No, this is interesting. But white privilege to me is a made up term to victimize people who actually do the work, you know, the white guys, or a lot of the work in society, for other people that are not as qualified and don't deserve the positions that white guys have in order to take them away. So it's a political weapon. So when someone says white privilege, what they're really saying is we want unqualified people who aren't white guys to take the jobs and get the benefits and get the money and work in the government and have the power and be the managers and be all the things that white guys have to work hard to do because we don't have any privilege. That's the big myth. You know, we're the opposite of privilege. You look at any white guy who got anywhere in society, they didn't get there because of affirmative action. They didn't get there because of quotas. They didn't get there because of scholarships that were set aside for minorities. They didn't get there because of anything other than their own hard work. Okay, so the white guys are the only people in this country who can say honestly that we don't have any privilege because everybody else does. You look at the latest Brandon program, and I went over some of it yesterday. What it talks about very specifically is kicking everybody out of government who's a white guy and opening it to everybody else. Well, that's an idiocracy. That's an idiocracy of diversity. So white privilege is a racist weapon. It's a racist weapon. That's what white privilege – when people say, you know, you've got white privilege, white people who say it are idiots. You know, minorities who say it are using it as a racial weapon to say that I want what you do without earning it, without having the ability, without having the capability, and without
just
putting in the hard work.
Give it to me.
That's what
just
it is.
Give it to me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with you. 100%. Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. That's what it is. I mean, you know, the other thing, you know, what came up here recently in the news, you know, of course, you'll follow that. But anyway, you know, that white guy that got shot in St. Louis by the black guy, okay?
Right.
We don't hear nothing about it. Nothing. It'll be nothing. You know, the black guy shot the white guy, and that was it.
Well, that goes to the narrative. So it's a political.
Right.
So what makes news is what advances the political leftist agenda. You know, white people are bad, black people good. And so that's the problem. But we have to call it out. But where's the conservative George Soros? You know, buying up a bunch of media. Where's the equivalent?
Right.
You know, the closest would be Donald Trump. You know, but he ran for president.
Right.
But where are the conservatives with money buying media outlets and saying, you know, a black guy shot a white guy today? It's a racist hate crime. They're not out there.
That
should be.
Are
they afraid?
You know, Biden's running. He's running again for presidency in 2024. That's their claim.
Well, he can't because he didn't win the first time. Let's be honest.
I'm with you on that too. Absolutely. We covered
well, say it.
We weren't here for.
You gotta say it.
On all my programs, they had me on. Right, I was on the radio for 24 hours around the clock. I don't think I ever slept, so my assistant had to come and help. But yeah, that see that here again. But we're not doing nothing about it, man. We're not doing nothing. Nobody cares. People simply.
Well, no, we can.
People. Exactly.
But it starts with you. You can't say President Biden if you know he's not the president. You can't say Biden
right.
administration because all you're doing is aiding the coup. You're reinforcing the coup. See, I never say that.
Right.
It's always Brandon,
President
Biden.
Absolutely.
You know, something else. But I refuse to aid the coup for the same reason I don't mention the names of school assassins because I'm not going to give them fame. But it starts
right.
with you
right.
and then it goes to everybody else. So you have to
right.
you have to protest and you have to make a stand. Brandon is not
right.
the president. I stand by that. You know, you've got seven
right.
states with battleground electors. You got seven battle. Let me rephrase that. You've got seven battleground states with Trump electors that are still valid electors for the 2020 presidential term that have not been dealt with. They are still out there. And Mike Pence is a traitor. Mike Pence overruled, lied, and did everything he could to stop Donald Trump from becoming president.
Mm-hmm.
He did it illegally by not considering the Trump electors. That was the whole purpose of January 6th. He engaged in a coup. He made his bones to the deep state. And he thinks because of that, he's going to get the Republican nomination. And that was his test. That was his loyalty, you know, thing. It's like to be in the mafia, you got to go kill somebody. Well, you know,
right.
metaphorically speaking, that's what Mike Pence did to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He killed his election chances
yeah.
so that he can be the nominee. And you watch my – I say Mike Pence is going to be the deep state candidate. I'll tell you right now. And that's why.
Oh, yeah.
Because he did a bit
right.
of the deep state. Go ahead.
Exactly. You know, here's the deal. You do this for us, we'll do this for you. Money talks. That's that. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
Money. It's all about the money game. And, you know, I even stated, you know, a lot of people mm-hmm. pop me and I got a lot of emails and people pressing me and people praising me at the same time. And the statement was, I said that this money going to Ukraine, you know, say $30
mm-hmm.
billion, dollars, just about $5 billion. I said $30
right.
billion goes, but they keep 15, we get 15 back. But it don't come back. And I said, Russia's pissed off. Russia's pissed off because Biden, and, whatever the guy's name is, Walensky or whatever his name is, they got a money game going. And it was Biden's personal money laundering country. I mean, he could launder money to it. I mean, and it showed it. It's right on camera. And he still got elected. Or was, well, supposedly. We know it was a lot. But anyway,
wasn't
you know,
elected.
This guy stated.
Brandon was the choice of government. So I call it
he
the government
like,
choosing
right.
the government. That's what Brandon is. Brandon
right.
is the government choosing
well,
the government.
The corporate. Right, right. But I
okay.
go pretty deep in all this about the first 15 all stuff and how it's all about. But the thing, what I'm saying is they simply are – he said that he would not give the country the money if they didn't fire this prosecutor, which is extortion to me, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm going to be here for 6 hours. If he ain't fired by the time I leave, you ain't getting nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What's it?
Now,
it's
you know,
on
what's
camera.
Interesting about that? Hold on, Ethan, just to say what's interesting about that is he said that at the Council of Foreign Relations, and nobody's ever questioned
mm-hmm.
what was he doing at the Council of Foreign Relations, you know, talking about
right.
foreign policy as an inside, basically confessing to the crime of bribery and extortion on camera. Why the Council of Foreign Relations? You know, I mean, nobody picks
yeah.
that up. It's all over the wall behind him, right? But nobody says anything.
Yeah.
It's what's not
the
reported that fascinates me. Yeah. What
right,
do you think?
The big guy. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. You want to talk corruption. It's, you know, and I, you know, I about 14 years ago, when I first got on beach, I started on another show, which I wound up hosting the show, and I had a co-host with me, but, and
mm-hmm.
we got really popular, and everything did good, and I told people, this is how I got this position, was the fact is, I said, this is what's going to happen soon,
mm-hmm.
sooner than you think, and I'm not talking tomorrow, but I'm talking within the next so many years,
mm-hmm.
and here it is, it's happened. The economy's gone to shit. It's going to get rough.
Yeah,
it's going to get rougher yet.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
well, what do you
it,
think?
If you can't see it in front of you, you're blind.
Let me ask
you,
okay, let me ask you, let's get some solutions here because this is Action Radio. And so
right.
rather than what I see most shows doing, which is raising complaining to an art form, I want to know solutions. Now, my solution is citizen legislation. I don't know if you had a chance to go to writeyourlaws.com. That's our bill writing site. We take bills. Mm-hmm. We take anybody. We teach people how to write legislation. We submit it to all levels mm-hmm. of government. I've got a bunch of bills out now. I've got some bills with friends of mine at CPAC. Hopefully they will introduce our vaccine product liability bill, our bill to end big tech censorship. And the big one is a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money, because that's the only way you're going to stop their borrowing and stop inflation. And so those are the things that we do. So what do you do? What are your predictions for the future, and what are your solutions?
Well, the first thing, we got to get rid of the Federal Reserve, the private bank. That's the first thing we got to do. Political collapse.
How do you
do that? Well, we kicked them out. We did it before. We kicked them out twice before. A lot of people don't know about that in history. It's actually the Central Bank of England is what it is. I mean, a lot of people, it's the Federal Reserve. No. It has nothing to do with the government. People believe that. No, that's part mm-hmm. of the government, part of the Treasury Department. Right. No, it's not. It's a private bank. And, the bonds, what they do is they trade bonds. Everybody goes, okay, trade bonds, that's cool. Well, people don't realize it's the birth certificate, the bond itself. And we were sold. That's what they do.
Okay, I know where you're going. I'm going to hold you up right now. That's a bunch of nonsense.
Right.
Okay, the birth certificate is not a bond. Our lawyers are not all registered in England. All this national sovereign stuff, you don't have to pay taxes. It's a bunch of nonsense. I'll challenge you on it right now.
I'm not a sovereign, bro. No.
Okay, good. We are already sovereigns. So you don't have to pay somebody to get a certificate in the mail. Okay. But this your birth certificate is a birth certificate. That's all it is. Okay. It's not a bond. You don't have a bunch of money sitting in the treasury. All this myth. Here's one of the problems with talk radio is that there's a line. In fact, one of my own reporters who I love dearly, but there's a line where she makes sense and then she doesn't make sense, where she says, perfectly logical. I get it. I understand it. I accept it. It's wonderful. And then we cross this line and we go into this area that makes no sense that I don't accept. And we talk about this every week. And so same thing here. So where's the line? Let's see if we can find the line of what makes sense as we go into what I think does not make sense. And so that's kind of where I am right now. The birth certificate is the birth certificate. That's it. It's not a bond. There's no money in the treasury waiting for you. There's none of that kind of stuff. Unless you believe that, in which case, tell me.
Well, I have to believe because we did research on it. We did quite an extensive research on the topic. And it was by accident. It wasn't that, I would look at YouTube and these people saying, oh, it's, malarkey.
Uh-huh.
What happened, I was in my office one day, and I found my birth certificate. And I looked at mom, dad, it's got the fuzzy, warm, feeling cool, I'm not thinking nothing. It was the birth certificate. No big deal. It's my, bill of lading, more or less.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, what's going to find out the next is kind of part of that, too. Anyway, make a long story short, the thing was, when I was looking at it, I noticed at the bottom of the rim of the frame part of the picture of the paper, copy. It's a copy. You don't have the original. But anyway, on the bottom of it, it said, printed by American Banknote Company. You might want to write that name down, American Banknote Company. So it kind of shocked me. What does that mean? What is banknote?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. No, you got me interested now. Let me look it up. So let me do a quick search here. And I'll put articles aside. By the way, you should get me on Substack too, gregpenglis.substack.com. I've got an article, the one I released last night, is how to get 30 million illegal aliens to self-deport. That's kind of fun. So it's the American Banknote Company. Banknote Company. All right, let's see what comes up. Don't go away. This is going to be fun. American Banknote. The American Banknote Corporation. Corporation. It comes with ABC Corp. Okay, so here we go. Yeah. So it says ABC Corp. Hang on. We deal in reality here. This is better, more secure products start with ABC Corp since 1795. So it looks like they've been around for a while. So maybe they published the first Bill of Rights. ABC Corp history dates back 225 years. We are a manufacturing services company like no other and sit at the intersection of fintech, I guess that's financial technology, and omni-channel content. Oh, this is really BS. Customers requiring highly bespoke products wrapped in a blanket of security call in ABC Corp. We make secure simple. Okay. So the thing is, your birth certificate looks like, let me see if I can find birth certificates. ABC Corp history days back. Global operations serving 120 countries. About us. Manufacturing services. Our roots are in secure printer traced back through American Banknote Company over two centuries to 1795 when the newly established First Bank of the United States, and again, I agree with you, we shouldn't have a national bank, called upon us to create counterfeit resistant currency for a young nation. This is good. Okay, so what they make are secure birth certificates. So American Banknote Corporation, if it was secure enough for our original banknotes in 1795, you know, and their whole purpose is to make fraudulent proof or resistant documents. What's the problem with them printing your birth certificate?
Well, here's the deal. We call the company. And, you know, questions, that's what we do. We investigate. We do a lot of that on any topic. Really.
Who's we?
Anyway,
we call the company. Who's your group?
My Crazy Nation Radio people that work for me.
Okay.
I'm the host.
So you have a staff?
I have other people that work for me.
Okay, cool.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
So anyway, we researched this because it kind of shocked me. It kind of looked kind of odd. No bank, no birth ticket. What the hell does it got to do with each other? This doesn't make sense. Well, anyway, we contacted them. We made a phone call. We talked to this nice lady. She's really nice. And I asked them, what do you print? And she said, well, we print stamps and bonds. I said, okay, what about birth certificates? Well, I really can't talk about that. So she kind of answered a question without answering a question.
Wait a minute.
So
she says she can't talk about it in terms of what? Whether they actually print birth certificates or the technology used to print birth certificates?
I just think it was period. I don't know. She couldn't talk about it. This is a hush. Issue for some reason.
Well, do you see why this is critical, though? Think about this. If they have a technology, I mean, what makes, you know, their birth certificates fraud-proof is the fact that they have a technology that makes them fraud-proof. If they give that technology away to you, then it's not fraud-proof anymore. So it would make sense.
Yeah, I understand it. Right. I understand that. But there again, you know, I could say, yes, we print birth certificates. That's be fine and dandy. You know, stamps, bonds, birth certificates, whatever, you know. But she just didn't. You know, she choked up on it. So,
did you ask her about bonds?
Got curiosity. What's that?
Did you ask her about printing bonds or anything else?
She said stamps and bonds. I picked her for that. You know, I didn't want to push the subject.
Just curious.
Anyway, then we started researching everything on that. We went to the Treasury Department and everything else and found out about the cusped number on the birth certificate and all that.
Stop. Slow down. Nope. So you went to the Treasury Department and did what now?
We researched the cusped number on the birth certificate through the Treasury Department.
What's that word? Cusp? Say that again.
Cusped number.
CUSP?
Yeah.
Spell that. CUSPID? How do you spell it?
Yeah. You got me lost now.
CUSPID. Cusped number.
CUSPIT. CUSPIT.
PIT. Cusped number.
Like
cusped.
Anyway. There's a number on your birth certificate. There's another number. There's a birth certificate. There's an actual ID number on your birth certificate. Which is like, you know, as far as like a cusped number, like a cow tag. You know, cow ear tag? You got those numbers on it. That's what it's for. That's inventory.
Okay.
So that's what it means. I mean, I don't know about birth certificate part. That's not where we went for that. Well, what we did is we took that number and we put it into a bond calculator, and it did come up to an amount of money. It didn't say it's your money. It's not you, the person on birth certificate's money. It's not, that's not the story. We cannot get any further with that. Why there was a dollar amount value there. So do you go to
which website did you use? Which website did you use to do this?
U.S. Treasury. Gov.
Okay. Well, it says here, it says, what is a cusped? And they have CUSIP number. Is that what you meant, CUSIP?
Yeah.
It says cusped number, and how do I find a stock or bond CUSIP? It says CUSIP refers to the Committee on Uniform Securities Identification Procedures, which oversees the entire CUSIP or cusped system. That's hard to say. The cusped number is a unique nine-digit number. So you got 9 digits on the birth certificate? Does that agree with you?
I believe. Yeah, that's been a while since I've did this research.
I'm just curious. Let's see what you remember. Right. Unique 9-digit identification number assigned to all stocks and registered bonds in the United States and Canada, and is used to create a concrete distinction. Oh, they got me. They want me to subscribe. No, not yet. Distinction between securities that are traded on public markets. These numbers are used to help facilitate trades and settlements by providing a constant identifier to help distinguish the securities within a trade. Well, this all makes sense. Each trade and corresponding cusped number are recorded to facilitate the tracking of actions and activities. You don't want to lose track of your bonds. So I don't see birth certificate mentioned anywhere.
It's not. It's not going to be. It's not. Because it's not what you think it is. That's the whole point. Even though it says birth certificate on it, okay, certificate. And, you know, you got to look at other things. What else other things has a birth certificate? Like a ship? You
know,
boat?
No. A ship has a what does a ship have? It has some kind of a charter, or it has some kind of contract, you know, to build it.
But it's like a bill of lading. It's what's on the ship is the issue.
That, no, that's a manifest.
That's
different.
Right, but you got to have it to come to port.
Right.
You're coming into a berth. You're coming into a berth.
Birth.
So
birth,
I mean,
and birth
it's kind of, I know it's crazy.
There's B-I-R-T-H
right.
and B-E-R-T-H. Okay, so we don't
right.
have to choose those two.
Right.
All right. Uh-huh.
Right, right. But you got to you gotta look at the history. You gotta it's a lot of research involved that really come up with a conclusion.
Oh,
and
sounds
we
like
never
it.
Got actual any conclusion. We never did come up with the answer. They just couldn't understand the point. Why was it, you know, they state that the birth certificate didn't come up until 1933 after 1929 uh-huh. Great Depression, and, you know, and the
okay.
other thing is license. But we also got into the field of licensing, you know, marriage license, driver's license, fishing license, and business license. Why do you need permission in a free world?
Well, I agree with you there. I think the driver's license is unconstitutional because in a free society, we have a right to travel. If you don't have a right to travel, you don't have a free
right.
society. So the idea of a driver's license is absurd. Now, on the
but
other
you
hand,
two categories.
You know,
that's the thing.
Well, wait a minute. Let me just finish the being a pilot. You know, I do believe in demonstrating your competency. I don't want people hopping in the airplanes
right.
just because they think they have a right to travel. So there's nothing wrong with requiring a test of your competency to operate a vehicle, but you're not being licensed. The government isn't giving you permission. You get, you know, you get to do it by simply demonstrating your ability. That means anybody who has the ability, and people should be tested, I think, every 10 years, and after 65, every 5 years, and after 80, like, you know, every 6 months, you know. Anyway,
yeah,
but the point is
I agree with
that,
you, right.
that you should be able to demonstrate, but the only requirement for a driver's license is that, or a driver's certificate, is that you should demonstrate your competence. And that can be done mm-hmm. local police or insurance okay. companies, or we can figure out how to do that. But there should not be a driver's license, which is not to say you should not have identification. I don't mind the state requiring an identification. You should be able to clearly identify who you are. That's public information.
Right.
Okay, just like
yeah.
your passport
right.
when you come into the country. But this CUSIP number,
right.
I've got the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission on here now, and they talk about CUSIP numbers consist of 9 characters, including letters and numbers that uniquely identify a company or issuer and the type of financial instrument. So to have a CUSIP number birth certificate makes no sense. I'd have to see one. I don't.
Everyone has it. Every one of them has them. They do.
Okay.
Everyone. They
all right.
Do.
Now, is that, all right, wait a minute. Just because it has a CUSIP number and CUSIP numbers are used on bonds and financial instruments does not mean that the birth certificate is a financial bond or a securities instrument simply because it's on a birth certificate. All it means is that that printed birth certificate is a unique number using the technology that's also used for financial instruments. So you can't make the association just because they both have CUSIP numbers that the birth certificate is a financial instrument. That's an illogical leap.
Right, but you got to do the research and look in history. That's how we come up with it.
Well, that's what I got you for. Tell me the history and you know, tell
well,
me
I don't,
your case.
I don't remember all of it, dude. It's been, you know, I remember talking years ago why on this.
Okay,
it,
well, I'm
it,
just curious.
It's
you know,
been
no
quite
problem.
Some time. But I'm just, you know, off the top of my head, I'll give you. But the thing is, it came out, you know, the issue was how it came up. Like a driver's license. Okay, they consider it a privilege. You know, what do you mean privilege? Why do you see what I mean? That just don't make no sense.
Okay, well, let's talk about that.
We looked at every topic in license.
Wait a minute, who determined it was a privilege? Who determined it was a privilege?
The state living.
I think it was a judge. Let's find out. This is a good topic
exactly
to research.
Who came up that term? I don't know.
Well, let's find out. Because we didn't have driver's license
at
the founding. You know, you don't have a horse license. So this is something that came about after a certain amount of time. Let's go. Who created let me see who in government?
The original driver's license
first,
came out for people that were hired to drive other people. That's a driver.
That's a commercial license. That's different.
Right. It's right.
Well,
so
corporations
if you have to have a driver's license as a regular person, that makes you commercial.
Uh-huh.
See?
Yeah.
There's two different type of people. You are a few people. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't seem to understand that. And a lot of people will argue the point, and that's fine with me. But we tested this out, too. You know, there's a difference between an American citizen and a U.S. citizen. Two different people. Same guy.
That's not true.
Different
category. That's not true.
I don't know. We tested it
it's
and
not.
We found out
you know,
that
I mean,
it's
the same
legit.
Thing. All right. The country is the United States of America. You know, when the Constitution says we the people of the United States of America, you can use different terms. You can say American citizen or U.S. citizen, but it's the same thing. Two citizenships. That doesn't make any sense.
I know. It's crazy. I get it. That's what I know.
Okay.
I didn't believe it either, man. I'm with you on that. I'm 100% with you.
Well, I don't believe it at all. I think it's a bunch of nonsense.
Well, you guys need to research. You'll find out as you go along. But
okay, so wait, Ethan. If you don't present the research when you present the case, you have no case. See, this is what I'm getting at. Constitution says
right
here, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, et cetera, et cetera. So the Constitution says, we the people of the United States, the Constitution by the states ratified to limit the federal government to certain powers. And the ultimate power in the states is the people. So the Constitution is representative of we the people of the United States. That's what the citizenship is. So you can't be, if you say American or say U.S. citizen, the citizenship doesn't change. I mean, the words might change, but the citizenship doesn't change. Right?
Kind of.
This is really important. What we're talking about here is really important. I'll tell you why. Because there's a lot of folks that will say stuff like this, and I just want to challenge it. Okay, but many people believe exactly what you're saying. So you represent a huge population out there of folks.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, if you just because you do research doesn't mean you did correct research. Just because you did research doesn't mean your conclusions based on that research are correct. So what I want you to do is prove the case. Okay, if you can distinguish and cite sources and lead me to a place that'll show me that there's a difference between an American citizen and a U.S. citizen, I'm all for it. I'm with you.
Okay. Well,
makes sense.
And
you can call back
easy.
Too. You don't have to do it now. You know, okay.
Well, that's cool. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm just telling you, man. We live in it's a different world than you can handle. It's a lot of people. Oh no, you're talking sovereignty and all that. No. I don't talk to that. I don't care. Sovereign.
Okay,
people claim to be sovereigns are crazy. They're just nuts to me, personally. I think they're out of their mind. You know, because of the way they portray it, you know, like the birth certificate and, I'm above the law and all these other things, you know. There's two different categories, though. There's two different sets of rules. But one's law, one's rule. It's kind of crazy. You know, the Constitution
rules
right?
have the effect of laws, but they're not the same thing. Regulations. So let's just call them regulations. Regulations are different
than There's rules
even though
and there's laws.
Same effect.
Right. Rules and law. Right. Like all driving incidents or anything to do with the driver's license, traffic tickets, all that stuff are considered rules. You know, you have a book that you read before you get driving called Rules of the Road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it means.
But they're based on
laws.
They're based on laws that created the Department of Motor Vehicles, the Motor Vehicle Code, things like that. All those codes and rules and regulations are all based on original laws.
How many laws do we have in the United States? How many laws
do we
have?
Well, I can check the U.S. Code and go by title and section and probably tell you. But I don't think that's really
relevant. Well, I asked one time on my show, I asked people, I said, when you woke up this morning, how many felonies did you commit? You know, and it's crazy. I mean, there's so many different things out there that could get you locked up that seem like it don't make no sense at all, you know, and it's sad. We are so bombarded with so many laws and rules that are turned into so-called laws, and it's on and on and on, and never end.
Okay,
they
wait a minute.
They don't subtract. They always
there
keep
are, the amount of laws is not the problem. The problem is the bad laws. Because there are good laws. We were right here. We have a law on vaccine viability. That's a good law. We have a law that eliminates big tech censorship. That's a good law. We have a constitutional amendment that would take away the power of Congress to borrow money. That's a good law. But these are all new laws. That's actually a constitutional amendment. We have a law. We have a bill that would disarm the federal bureaucracy, all 287,000 agents that are illegally armed. That's a good law.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not saying that there are too many laws. There's too many bad laws. But laws themselves, you need a certain amount of laws or you have anarchy. And if you have total laws, you have totalitarianism. So what you want to have is a situation where you have just enough laws to maintain your liberty. And liberty is the place where any fewer laws you had for anarchy and any more laws than you had for tyranny. So it's a really balanced point that protects life, property, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the point of liberty. That's where you want to be. So you need only enough laws to do that. Make sense?
Kind of, but if you don't have that,
kind of,
you don't have liberty anymore. You don't, no, that's done and gone. The fact
okay, where
is,
am I wrong? Tell me where I'm wrong.
Take for example, red flag laws. Okay, yeah. They have the right to walk in your house anytime they want to. You no, not
that's not constitutional. Those laws are illegal.
That's what?
They're illegal. They're enforced
yes,
at gunpoint.
Very,
but they're illegal.
Very.
There's no such thing as red flag laws or prior restraint. Prior restraint is arresting you
right.
for what the government thinks you might do in the future, maybe.
Right.
That is unconstitutional.
Right.
That is illegal. All police. Red flag
right.
laws are categorically illegal.
But, you know, the new law, that one red flag law, is I could think my neighbor's crazy. Just out the top of my head to say, my neighbor, I think, is crazy. Not that I
right.
don't, that I know this guy or anything like that, but I can call the police and tell them this guy's crazy. I think he has guns, so they get to go walk right in his house and see if he has any weapons.
No,
no,
they don't.
Nothing. Yes,
no,
they do.
They don't. They do it, but they don't do it legally. Let me ask you. Let me just
right.
one more question. I got
right.
Diane on the line. We're gonna switch over here to our election integrity report. But it says in 1886, this is from the history.com, right? So getting back to driver's license, 1886, German inventor Carl Benz patented what is generally regarded as the first modern car. Less than two decades later, in 1903, guess where? Massachusetts, you know, and Missouri became the first states to acquire a driver's license. Massachusetts, that bastion of freedom in the 1700s, by 1900 was already a socialist state. Okay, we're going to look into this because I want to get the original legality of who first decided. So let's go. I'm going to go to Massachusetts and Missouri and see why they required a driver's license, because they can't.
Right.
If you have a right to travel, and I'm not saying you can't test for competency. Okay, that's
right.
definitely a thing for government to do, or for industry, or somehow to do it. But government is responsible for determining, you know, the legal and the illegal uses of, for example, motor vehicles. That's their job. But can they require a license to be able to do that and exercise it as a privilege? No, they can't. Oh, there we go. All right. On that note, thanks, Ethan. Appreciate your calling the show today. Probably a little more than you bargained for, but that's kind of what we do around here. Hey, Diane, did you get a chance to hear some of our chat?
Hey, good morning. No, sorry. Just got on.
Oh, okay. I don't have a thing
for
you, but I'm
working
on
2 minutes. Oh, you do?
Yeah. Well,
what is
well let me, actually, I don't have a theme for you, but I do have something I can play just to kind of get us in the mood for talking. I haven't played this for a long time. I have all these things on my right side here on the screen. Yeah, back in a minute. So this will get in the mood to talk election integrity and medical freedom. Return to those founding principles that made us great that have been so violated by the current coup, the current illegal activities, and all the other nasty stuff that's going on. So you feel in the mood now? You feel patriotic? You feel America first-ing? Well, good.
Here.
Welcome back. What you got? What's going on?
Oh, I was so excited to see something today. Well, it was actually last night.
What happened?
I've always been a fan of Sidney Powell.
And, me too.
She just kind of went dark. She just went quiet, really quiet for a long time. I think, I don't know, an NDA maybe? Somebody shut her up. But she came back, and I know, it makes you wonder, you know. But I saw something. I follow her on Telegram, and she finally came back. I had tried to find in 2021, she had posted some patents that the DOD had, and they were one of them. I'm sitting here looking at them now. But I tried to find them. She was talking about them, and I could never find them on her site. She's gotten her site a lot more organized.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's posting the patents from the DOD, and they are to to follow our elections and to interfere with our elects, basically. So
okay, so DOD's
well,
come up
any
twice
election,
now in the last
hour.
No, hold on a sec, because this is really important. DOD and the CIA especially, but the DOD has come up twice now in conversations with Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Robert
yeah.
Malone, and now
and
with Sidney Powell with elections. So with Jeff Childers.
And Jeff
okay,
Childers.
So, yeah, let's mm-hmm. don't forget Jeff Childers. So now we've got the DOD doing two things, COVID and elections.
Yep.
So there's our work for the next 6 months right there. So what is going
yep.
on here? What is the DOD doing? And Josie wants the military to take over? Sorry, Josie. No. Because these are the people that are going to do it. So let's talk
well,
first about
Well, I don't know. There may be a good fraction. There may be a good faction of the military. There may be a good faction of the military left.
I'm sure there is.
I'm going to send you this.
But we're not
I'm
seeing
send
them.
You this.
They're not in power right now. Yeah.
Well, that's just because you got Millie in charge. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to email this to you now, and you can look at it with me. How about that?
Okay. Let's go over it. Well, you sent me something which I unfortunately had to take off my screen because I can only have so much on the bottom of my computer and get the show done. So that's part of it. Anyway, go ahead. Send me something. Let me check my email.
I haven't sent it yet, so it'll take a second. I'm sending it to your personal email.
Oh,
okay.
Good. I'll wait.
So
okay.
it's on the way. Now, it's under her site. It's called Defending the Republic, Sidney Powell.
Uh-huh.
If you want to look it up and follow along with us.
Well, I got a funny story to tell you about Sidney Powell in a bit. So defendingtherepublic.com.
Well, I sent you the email. I'll give you the link. But I'm talking about for our viewers if they wanted to follow along with us. If you get on to Defending the Republic, it was on September 29th of 2021 that she put this out. And this letter. And so
yeah, this is
the
one you sent me before.
That she
I've got it, but I had to, like I say, I had to take off my screen at that time because I had too much stuff on my screen. So let's take a look at it now. Okay.
I think, yeah, I sent it to you last week.
That's okay. Yeah.
So, but there's
I sent you my article last
number.
Night, too. Yeah.
I have not seen it. Okay, U.S.
Well, I just
7
I wrote it
million.
Midnight. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, no wonder I haven't seen it. 7,549,049 B2. That's the patent number. 7549049 B2. The patent date was June 16th of 2009. And I haven't been
that
able to look
be
over any of this stuff,
Obama.
But,
that would be Obama's term. What
yeah,
be?
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
Oh,
hmm.
How about that? Okay. So where are you in this big form you just sent me? So where are we now? It says, Defending the Republic, join the fight to preserve the foundation of America. They all know how to
down.
Do it. Go ahead.
Go down, and you see the patent number, the first patent that she
U.S.
shows.
United States patent number U.S. 7549049B2. June 16, 2009.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll go down. See the highlighted yellow part, the abstract. That's what I was about to read.
Would you like to read
the
that and tell us about it? Go ahead.
I don't. I'm just now first looking at it. So I'm going to read
well,
it for the first time.
I do that on the air all the time. Don't worry about it. Just read and think and talk. Just do it all at once. Welcome to radio.
Well, this is the part that she highlighted that she thought was important. Present invention relates to a system and method for dynamically auditing of electronic elections using an electronic registration and voting system. In particular, the present invention provides false voting data associated with false voters to the voting system, recovers voting records associated with the false voters, and compares the stored voting records to the original false voting data. How
That's
funny.
Hysterical.
They don't tell
That's
us about this stuff.
So this is in the patent, right? Okay, so for folks to understand, I'm just learning this for the first time because I got this sent yesterday, but I didn't have a chance. I was writing my own article. But there's a U.S. patent. It says dynamic auditing of electronic elections. So the auditing machine is designed for fraud, and they have a patent. They've actually patented fraud. This is friggin' hysterical.
I see. I found this, before I really got into a lot of election integrity stuff, right as I was getting into Defense Florida, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. And then it just disappeared, and I couldn't find it anywhere. It's like they made her take it offline, or they were killing her line or whatever. I don't know. But so I was so excited. And I was just talking about her this week. It's like God works in mysterious ways, and then back she comes.
Yeah, look at Action Radio.
And I was just
tell me about it.
I know. I was so wondering where her patents were, because I'm like, they were awesome. I didn't get any kind of copy of them. I didn't before they took them all down. So,
yeah, put this on your hard drive. It's like when I do my Substack on the CDC chart, you know, that proves that COVID ended about mid-July of 2020. I have that on my hard drive.
Yeah.
And so when the FBI seizes it, that's fine. I still remember what the chart looks like. So you guys, you know, you and the FBI who are listening to us right now, you know, you can take my computer. You can take anything you want. I've still got a brain, unless you kill me, which may be the plan. I don't know. We'll find out someday.
Let's not do that.
Let's not do that. Okay, no, I want to be around. I got things to do. But in other words, if they take all my stuff, I still got my brain. I still remember it. I just can't. I won't be able to demonstrate this graphically. And so, yeah, I shouldn't talk in such stark terms. You know, actually, a friend of mine who's a reporter, Judy McLeod up in Canada, who does Canada Free Press, is basically for Americans, said that all reporters should routinely say every like 2 or 3 months that they're fine, they're healthy, they're normal, you know, they're not suicidal, life is great. And just in case something happens, you know, we'll say, well, they just said they were fine, you know. So every once in a while I think about that. So I
am
shouldn't
not
joke
suicidal.
Yeah, exactly. Neither am I. I'm happy. I've never been this happy. I'm so happy. Look, we get to talk on the radio about all this cool stuff. Anyway, so the point is that, you know, the FBI, KGB, you know, if you're listening in, you probably are. First of all, if you're going to show up at my place, you know, give me some warning. I'll make coffee. We'll talk. You know, we'll talk like civilized people. Then you can seize all my stuff illegally. Having said that, hope I'm not inviting too much trouble here. But, you know, I can't help it. I just can't. Free speech means that you speak freely. Okay, that's the whole point, folks. All right. Anyway, so back to the patent. Now, so tell me about what you know about Sydney Powell. What do you know about her?
I'm going to read down the highlighted portions on this page.
Okay.
Go down to the next highlighted portion.
Why don't you do the whole page? It's not that long. Do this whole section.
I don't want to read the whole thing.
Okay, I'll do it later.
I got too much other things to talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, just do the highlights.
She knew the highlighted part. She put the highlights in there, so these must be the important parts. Says this invention was made with government support under the Orders for Service, DOD, FBAP, all these numbers, doesn't really matter. But awarded to Censure by the National Institute of Health Division of Information Technology Acquisition. The government has certain rights in this invention.
See, I didn't know the government could patent technology or things. See, I don't think that's legal.
Yeah.
And because if the government patent, so in other words,
they're not doing anything else legal.
Well, that's true too. Yeah, but just think about it. If you have an invention, you know, that you want to patent, you send all the documents into the trademark, the USPTO, and I forgot which comes first. It's either patent and trademark or trademark and patent office. You send it into the patents department of the government to have your invention patented, you know, whether it's the computer, the automobile, the refrigerator, whatever it is that you come up with. And the government says, you know, that's a really cool idea. We're going to patent it first. Well, that defeats the whole purpose of the patent office. If they're stealing inventions from people, making them government. But this doesn't seem to be that kind of case, because who thinks they could sell commercially a voting machine that's designed to make fraud of the election? Because that's illegal. Okay. So the only people who could.
Well, you know, they had all those patents for COVID, too. They had all those patents. And a lot of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's medical. We'll talk about that a bit. But think about this. The only entity in society that could patent a fraud voting machine is the government, because if anybody else did it, they'd be in jail. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like,
well,
it's just
that stuff all the time. If we did it, we go to jail. If they do it, it's just,
yeah.
You know,
well, see, that's
business
the problem,
as
though.
Usual.
Yeah, it's only the government that could have burned all those chemicals in Ohio, because if Norfolk Southern had burned all those chemicals, they'd be in jail for environmental, you know, mayhem. Or whatever the crime is.
Well,
but the government did. Well, it's just expedient. We just save time.
Get off on a tangent. They're trucking like truckloads of all that stuff, and they took them over to Michigan. And Michigan was like, no. And they took them right to some friends from here own a condo up there, and they took them to that town. I'm like warning them because they're up there. And I was like, yeah. Well, you're getting truckloads of nasty stuff coming to Michigan. So we got off on a tangent.
Yeah, Michigan's going to be really – well, that's – now that makes it interstate commerce. Well, Congress can get
Well, they don't – once again, they don't care. They're going to do whatever they want.
Oh, that's crazy.
Okay.
Right, let's get back to fraudulent technology, because this really is fascinating.
I know. This is so exciting. I can't tell you how excited I was.
Okay.
It made my day.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the next highlighted section says 100 accessible through a network, 110 such as the internet, by users such as absentee voter or a person desiring to register as a voter for any computing device, 120 anywhere in the world, and subject to the voters' local or state laws. I don't know what any of this means.
They might be footnotes. Let's look at the bottom of the page and see if they're listed down there somewhere. No, I don't see them. So it corresponds to something.
Says something about an internet cafe in any city, state, or country. So they're like going to do this from an internet cafe in Paris or something.
Yeah.
Control our voting. Nice. Now, there's another, the next patent is number 7377431B2, date May the 27th of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, Obama.
This is the present convention was supported in part by the U.S. Army. The government may have certain rights to this intervention.
Wait a minute, governments don't have rights. This is all illegal. And here's illegal. Keep going. What's next?
A system and method for overcoming decision-making and communication errors to produce expedited and accurate group choices.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, the individual voters don't count. Wait, hold on. What that means is individual voters don't count. They're gonna take the groups, and they're gonna group the votes, and so they get their intent. Yeah, exactly.
It says in the past, wired and wireless networks have been used to process individual choices or votes into collective outcomes in decision rooms, survey polls, and other collective decisions. Nice. Do not weight individual votes on one or more dimensions of choice to maximize the group probability of making one or more correct or optimal collective decisions.
Okay, let me explain that one. So what they used to do, they would weight the votes. In other words, a vote for Brandon would count as one and a half. A vote for Trump would count as half a vote. So in other words, Trump had to get two votes for every vote that Brandon got when they weighted the votes. Okay, that's illegal.
Yeah.
One person, one vote, they all count 100%. But not in this system.
Yeah.
So this is fraud. This is great. Now, where is this going? Yeah. I think we're at the end. We've got some diagrams and some other stuff down here. So where are they going with this? What do you think? What is Sidney Powell said? Okay. Well, you know I want her on the show now, right?
I love her.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story
now,
in a minute.
Now, she said, okay, let me read something that she put on her site. She said something about if people don't believe her, they're like, why didn't you bring the Kraken? She calls it the Kraken. And it's like no judiciary will see her evidence. She said no one disputes it, but no one
that's how they get around
it. The judiciary will even look at her evidence.
Well, see, that's why. That's their plausible deniability. And that's how the left says, well, this no court has accepted, no court has ruled against, Brandon ruled for Trump. Well, they've never looked at the evidence. See, that's illegal. They have to. The courts have to take the cases, and they're not doing it. Supreme Court had to take the Texas case. Mm-hmm.
Something about having like 4,000 documents, and no one will even look at her documents.
Well, they can't, because if they do, they'll have to do something. Now they're responsible for them, and they don't want to be responsible. So,
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that something comes of this. And with all that Arizona proceedings going on, I listened to that
About Katie Hobbs, and Josie mentioned this Tuesday, but let's talk about Katie Hobbs and, her connections to the cartel and anything you know about. And the woman, Ms. Berger, who just totally laid out the most amazing descriptions of corruption beyond anything. I got a pretty good imagination, and this is beyond what I thought. This was wild.
Yeah.
Do you have anything on that?
Well, a lot of it. Well, I listened to it for like an hour and a half. They, what is the guy's name? He's the actual investigator, Thoreau. I don't know what his name is. but it's his ex-wife. He's like throwing her under the bus. She was like really corrupt, and he has a whole lot of evidence on his ex-wife. But he's got a lot of evidence on Katie Hobbs that she's done a lot of it's laundering money through buying homes. And then they've used a lot of businesses that really don't exist. And so they went on and on and on. And the woman that was presenting, she wasn't really good at presenting. She kept stumbling over everything. She just had so much stuff that they kept stopping her, saying, well, you can't really go into that, because she was talking about murdering people, getting murdered, and they stopped her.
This wasn't the Australian woman, I heard. This is somebody different, right? Because the woman that was doing all the revealing was very local, very organized, and but she had an Australian accent, so, you know, she's been here for a few years, but,
well,
you know, the accent's still there.
I listened to her for an hour, and I thought she parts of it were real organized, stumbling over other parts, and they kept stopping her.
It must have been later then, because the part I heard like the first half of it, so maybe it was in the second half that she had problems.
She probably got tired.
Well, yeah, that happens. You know, don't speak
forever.
Too long. You got to be brief.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I have reporters on the show is I can't talk for 3 hours, and I wouldn't want to subject somebody to 3 hours of me talking. That's why I bring you folks on.
She had a ton of evidence, but then she got into the weeds, and I don't know who the panel was. I guess it was the Senate in Arizona.
See, that's key, though. We've had Wendy Rogers on the show, who's a state senator from Arizona.
Yeah.
She won re-election. She's on the judiciary, the election committees, things like that. And so chances are she was on that panel. And so that would be something to look into. So I would go to Wendy Rogers' sites and find out, you know, what this hearing was and what they're going to do with it. Because Arizona did a full audit, and yet they've never retracted their Brandon electors, despite the fact that the audit proved that Brandon didn't win. And that's the whole point of it.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't tell really who was in the room. I was watching it. I was listening to it on my phone, and they'd cut in and look at like a couple of gentlemen sitting there, and then they cut back to her really quick. So they didn't really look at anybody else that was in the room much. When I was looking at my phone, I was trying to do other stuff else. I was listening to it, so I should probably sit and just watch it on my computer and see what. But I mean, there's hours and hours of testimony.
I know.
It's hard to figure out when to.
Well, I wish they put out the edited versions. It's like when Congress does a hearing. I don't want to listen to the Democrats because I don't care about that. So I'm hoping that the GOP, when they get smart, will put out just the GOP questioners of all the radicals in the Brandon insurrection, and just so we can hear their questions. I don't care about the liberal questions. They don't say anything meaningful.
What are they going to do about this? There's like mountains and mountains and mountains of evidence out there. It's like a tinderbox. And like what match that's going to strike is just going to blow something out of the water where we get this stuff stopped.
Here's the problem, though. It doesn't matter how much evidence there is. They don't want to do anything. They think that they should just go along. They think that the next election is just going to push it. It's kicking the can down the road. You know, it's kicking our Constitution down the road is what they're doing. You know, because we've said on this show from the very beginning, if you don't fix 2020, there isn't going to be a 2022 or a 2024. Now, here's a question for you. I've been thinking about this for a while, ever since the 2022 election. The House went Republican. Now, why would the Democrats allow that? Knowing that they cheat, knowing that they could have thrown it.
They know they're controlling the rhinos. They don't care.
Okay. But there's still investigations. Yeah. Now, do you think the investigations are not going to do anything or go anywhere? Do you think McCarthy was put there to make sure? Okay. All right. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I agree with you. Yeah. All right. I was just curious.
Well, there's a whole bunch more going on, too, with Eric. So,
define that again so people don't think you have a boyfriend. I'm just kidding.
Eric? I have a wonderful husband of how many years? 33 years.
Sorry, dude.
No,
I couldn't
Eric
resist.
Is electronic. Electronic Registration Information Center. It's a big, corrupt, giant organization that we pay thousands of dollars for. We pay $25,000 to get into it for the state of Florida. There are 30-something states in the country that are in it. But it's like our legislators are now throwing it under the bus. They're like, it's like, I don't know, an enticement to stay away from getting rid of the machine. It's like, okay, we'll give you all this if you let us keep the machine.
But didn't they watch Terminator?
Don't
they know the machines don't have our interest at heart? I mean, what's wrong with these people?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have to get rid of both. Now, Eric you know, what I don't understand is, well, Cord Bird got on, he's our Secretary of State for Florida, and okay. He was on a Zoom call with a bunch of election integrity people the other day, and he's saying that the reason that he wants to keep Eric is because it gets rid of duplicate voters, which it doesn't.
Well,
that's
so
many
bogus.
Reports that it doesn't.
That's
so,
bogus.
What we found out was that it gets rid that, you know, if you Eric steals our information, it takes up a whole bunch of our information. We've got our last four of our social, all kinds of information from the DMV, Social Security. It takes all this information and it gives it private entities, NGOs, and one of them is called CEIR, C-E-I-R, and C-E-I-R, yeah. And that's illegal. And they haven't stopped it. And they actually collect information on minors, 16-year-olds. How many parents would be so furious that they found out that these people are taking information from their minors? Now, we can't prove what they're passing this year, but they're collecting information on minors because they're getting all the information from the DOD. Now, from the DMV. Now, the DMV says they don't give out information from minors, but I want to see that improved. We can't look at Eric's at their databases now. And this is the funniest part about Eric that came out this week. The Secretary of State of Alabama, he said he got elected. The very first thing he was going to do was get rid of Eric because he thought it was crooked. And he decided he was in Washington, D.C., and he went to Eric's home office, where they have it. They're labeled as their home office. He went over there. In D.C.
Was it Barcelona or where is it? Oh, it's D.C.? Okay.
There's nothing in D.C., yeah, and there's nothing there. It is a computer center where they rent out time on computers. I mean, it is not home-base for Eric. So they've bald-faced lied to all of us about where their home office is. So where is all of our personal information stored? They only have 6 employees. They don't need a big building. But, you know, where are they storing all of our personal information? If they're going to lie to us about where their home office is, what else are they lying about? So, and there's zero place on their entire database to input citizenship. So they don't give a flip if you're a citizen or not as a parent. And, you know, this we pay thousands of dollars a month for these people to bloat our voter rolls. They're supposed to be cleaning them. And they give away our personal information, which is illegal. So, and they lie about their home office. And our corrupt Secretary of State, I do not trust this man anymore. And he has got to get rid of this. And now it appears that they're trying to throw this under the bus. There's two different choices that we have that I'm seeing right now to be able to help us cleaning our database. And I haven't done enough I haven't looked and investigated them enough to know intelligently to have a conversation about either one of them. But Chris Jersky, he's the guy from Red Belly Road. They're from Lake County. And he's really into it's going with the post office. There is, if we use the post office, then you use, it's like the extra 4 numbers that come after your zip code. And he said, you get better rates. If we use that for our database, we know when people move, we have their correct addresses. You can find it all in real time. And let me see what the name of that was called. I have to find his email real quick. But he's a big believer in just using this tech. There's another technology called fractal programming that we've been looking into as well, and I'll talk about that in just a second. Okay, it's called the CAS Verified. That's C-A-S-S Verified. That's with the post office. So you get reduced rate postages, so states could save millions of dollars there. That they are currently giving to the printers only to have undeliverable mail go to our landfill. It said, with that same tool from USPS, we did an analysis on the entire state of Florida and found a little over 400,000 voters that had no good mail address on file. 7% of Florida voter registrations don't follow CAF verification standards.
Huh.
So if we use this, it might be better. I need to look into it a little bit more. And I'm telling you, this guy, Chris Durfee, he really is digging into some good stuff. So they're the ones that found in Lake County where Red Belly Road had been flipped over to 12th Avenue had been flipped illegally to Red Belly Road for 2 weeks.
I remember
and
that.
Then,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, but here's
two. They actually got two mail-in ballots sent to each one of those illegal addresses, and then it flipped back to 12th Row, and they caught it all, and they sent it all last April to our illustrious Secretary of State, who's done absolutely nothing. He has a ton of information. He's done nothing. No,
well, here's the thing, though. There's so much information. There's so much that we know is illegal.
Yeah.
And these people are chasing, you know, every last, you know, element of what's illegal, hoping that eventually, you know, some of these folks will pick up on it. They fundamentally don't want to. And so I think it's a waste of energy to keep pursuing, not what you're doing, but I'm saying what I think it's a waste of energy for all these folks to keep looking down every possible rabbit hole and determining every last bit of fraud. All you have to determine is that there is fraud. To either hold another election, invalidate the election, or have the person that came in second, you know, the challenger, have them win. It's just like disqualification. You know, if someone cheats in a race and comes in third, they're still disqualified. You know, you don't – this idea that we have to find enough fraud to show that that we're changing the election results, that's a bunch of nonsense. Because if you rob a store, the store doesn't have to go broke before you're arrested. You don't have to change the results of the store. Okay, what's illegal is what's illegal.
You got it.
So once
we have to have a judicial system that's not corrupt.
Well, that's
though.
Another problem. Yeah, but what I'm saying is that once something is But once something is illegal, once it's been established that it's illegal, that election needs to be void. That they need to take the challenger and have them win. So all those states that can be proved that there is some vote fraud, it doesn't necessarily matter how much. Now, if you're taking one or two votes, okay, that's absurd. But if you're talking anywhere
like the
near
chicken and the egg,
Well, but the point is that once you've established fraud,
what do you fix first?
You know, you don't have to establish all the fraud. You know, if you can
establish
the store was
robbed.
And
they've done nothing with it. But we have established fraud, and they've done nothing with it.
See, that's what I'm saying. So the going through the mechanisms, the machinations, I guess is the word, of establishing more fraud when we've already established fraud, it doesn't seem to be where our best efforts should be. This is what I'm questioning, because we already know what the fraud is. And I get invited to workshops and Zoom meetings, and there's more fraud. Look what we found. There's more fraud. Well, we know there's more fraud. We know that Brandon is not the president. We know the election was stolen. We know the voting machines rigged the elections. We know that the voter rolls are filled with people that shouldn't be there. So what we really need to start doing as a country, not just us here at Action Radio, is start to advocate the solutions. And the solutions are very simple. Just what your bill says. We get rid of – mine too. Sorry. We get rid of the machines, all of them. No voting machines. We go to paper ballots. Those paper ballots are counted by people who are bonded. They are counted on video so we can check the results. And all voter registrations expire December 31st at midnight, and every year you start fresh. So you have to reestablish. That way everybody proves their voter registration just like they prove their car registration. Everybody gets certified every year. If something's changed, you have to go through the process again. If nothing changes and you can verify that, great. We just renew your registration. But those four things is all we need. So all the corruption and all the last little bit of investigation and all the complexities of the machines and all the patents and all everything else the city of Powell is doing, I mean, God bless her for doing it. But quite honestly, we have more than enough fraud to pass laws right now that say paper ballots, hand-counted, bonded counters, videotape counting, expiring registrations. That's all we need. That would clean up the voting, system, assuming it's reported on.
Yeah, they'd only listen to us.
I have that feeling every day. People just listen to me. I'll tell you, we've got the solutions here. We fix all these problems. let me tell you about Sidney Powell.
The thing that I admire about everybody that's researching this, though, is that this uniparty has, and I kind of wanted to start calling them uniparty because it's not really the left. I mean, it's the uniparty is controlling a lot of people on the left. I think we do have some really good people that are on the left, because I know Steve Kirsch isn't Steve Kirsch a Democrat? I mean,
Let's make sure we're not confusing Steve Kirsch and Seymour Hersh, the two different people. Which one do you mean?
Steve Kirsch, the guy that does he's got a Substack.
He might be a Democrat. I don't know. You look at John Lott.
Yeah.
John Lott is a fairly moderate to liberal economist.
I'm pretty sure he is
what, a Democrat?
Yeah.
Okay. But he has integrity. Yeah, see, that's the difference.
Sure,
I don't care about I don't care if you're a Democrat.
Exactly.
I just care whether you have integrity.
That,
yeah.
That's why I don't really like, I want to say uniparty now instead of the left, because I think there's just as, probably as many corrupt ones in the Rhino Party on the right. So I want to lump them into uniparty, that they've melded the rhinos and the hard left corrupt ones. I want to meld them all kind of together and just call them the uniparty. And they're the ones that are really destroying our country and using all these puppets to create so much kind of distraction and chaos and corruption, and they go in and infiltrate and take over our judicial system. I mean, if you look at it, our judicial system's corrupted, our legislative system's corrupted, our electoral system's corrupted. It's like, and I feel like it's the chicken before the egg. Which one can we solve first to get out of this mess? And I'm hoping that...
Well, our bill is very straightforward. Our bill is very straightforward.
Yeah, but how do we get it passed?
But, you know, they're racing to other things that are nowhere near as consequential or as good or as effective. See, that's the problem I have. You know, when I wrote two bills for the Florida legislature during their special medical session on how to deal with COVID, and because there was a bill that said that the state of Florida could mandate any treatment, including vaccines, during a pandemic. So everybody screamed and yelled, so you can't mandate vaccines. So instead of, changing the law as I did, the one that I proposed, they basically took out the words and vaccines, but they said the part that the state of Florida could mandate anything required for a pandemic. What if they mandate vaccines?
Yeah.
So they did something, but they didn't, because they didn't want to actually fundamentally change or remove their power. They still wanted to have their power, but they wanted to tell people they actually did something. It's like this bill that's before them now on constitutional carry. It's not constitutional carry. Constitutional carry includes open carry. But the current bill doesn't have open carry. They say it's permitless carry, and that's constitutional carry. No, it's not. You cannot have constitutional carry if you don't have the ability to carry openly, because that's part of what the Constitution says, keep and bear, your choice. So they're trying to do something,
yeah.
And this being a shall-issue state, right, we get the permit anyway. As long as you meet the criteria, you get the permit. So they're giving you something that they have to give you anyway and saying that we're fixing it and making it better while not giving you anything new. So it's a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay. The solutions. Yeah.
Since,
go ahead.
All right. Since we had this big, well, there was a Zoom, and several on our team were in this Zoom with Corbett, and he's saying, "Oh no, we got to keep here because we get the we're fixing. We don't have any other way to tell if people have duplicate voter registrations." Well, this is ridiculous. There's another company that's come out, and it's called Cleaning U.S. Voter Rolls, and it's new fractal technology, minimum viable product. And this is – I know some on my team have been digging into this a bit. And I Chris Jersey was saying that he's not sure that he wants another centralized multi-state system with another centralized multi-state. Yeah. We don't want to need to replace one We don't need to replace one centralized multi-state system with another centralized multi-state system.
No, I agree. Absolutely. It's like you don't replace one dictatorship with another. I don't want to replace Brandon's dictatorship illegally with a military dictatorship, even though people think that would be the right thing to do. No, it's the wrong thing to do because a dictatorship is still a dictatorship. I agree with go ahead.
This is the new fractal technology, and it sounds pretty interesting, but I don't know if it can be corrupted. But, every state has election rolls of registered voters. These rolls, under federal law, must be maintained and cleaned regularly. Effective cleaning is not being done. The following is the minimum viable product, MVP, the minimum requirement that current technology enables. Any entity that does not offer such minimal service cannot claim to adequately clean voter rolls. Can't talk. Every item on this list is available today at modest cost and can be brought into production with modem technology in any state in 45 days or less. This is number one. Voter registration rolls should be reconciled every 30 days with county personal property tax rolls, ensuring every address at which a registered voter resides is valid. Number two, voter registration rolls should be snapshotted by date at least monthly. Every voter roll snapshot is compared with every previous snapshot and the differences preserved in a readable file for public review with graphical and tabular representations. That would catch the stuff that Chris Jersey did for Red Belly Road. Now, every voter address should be scanned by an artificial intelligence AI engine to take the same address if presented in multiple ways and bring it into uniform address type. That would be like if they took off the like the apartment numbers like they were doing for the Red Belly Road stuff. Now, number four is beginning 45 days before early voting, the MVP should begin daily snapshots of the voter rolls. These comparisons identify new voters added after deadlines, zip code changes, or other election commission changes that inject doubt into election outcomes. That could be pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm.
If they could see if there's new voters that came on both after the deadline. That would be actually pretty helpful.
You could do all that before an election. You've got your election cutoff date for registration, for new registrants.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is sometime before that, do an audit, like 2 weeks ahead of time. And then you can find whatever problems there are. And you still have 2 weeks to contact people and say, you got a week to get here. Or maybe do it a month ahead of time, and go over.
We could use that with we could do that with a USPS, too, I would think. But these are really good ideas to do.
Yeah,
okay, number five, available state databases should be reconciled against state voter rolls, DMV records, death records, NCOA change of address records. I don't know what that is. List of non-citizens and other information the state captures should be available to reconcile against the voter rolls to ensure consistency. They have a lot of good ideas. I don't know if they should be the one running or we should take these ideas and put in the USPS system. But the system should be able to run as an outside service or as a state-run service, the infrastructure, in a cloud, someone else's data center, as the state mandates, inexpensively implemented in 45 days or less. I think that it should be state-run. It shouldn't be an NGO. If they're going to use this, we should own it. We should be able to look into it. There shouldn't be any proprietary information at all. If it's available for access, where anybody can get into it at any point, they'd have a hard-pressed time to, a lot harder time to corrupt it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number seven, the MVP should identify any inserted characters, hidden characters, or strings in voter registration numbers, rendering them difficult for citizens to process on current computers. Such control characters and strings should be removed and, if not possible, identified. And number eight, MVP should operate real-time with queries, sorts, or other data manipulation happening in less than 10 seconds across all databases visible from a mobile device. So the public could look into it at any time they wanted to. And number nine, during early voting, the MVP system should receive daily updates of who voted electronic poll book and compare each day's data with all previous day's data, ensuring cast ballot information is never modified. So the cast ballot vote that I have found out recently about what we got for our cast ballot, they didn't give us any timestamps on our cast ballot vote, which that is very suspicious because that's how they caught all these spikes. When I was listening to Professor David Clement, 2 weeks ago, last week, he was showing that they took the cast vote records and they put them into real time and they put them into this graph. And it was like you watch the graph grow, then you watch the graph go back, then you watch the graph grow, then you watch it go back. And it was the votes counting in real single votes that went in. So it was like, and they were doing them in big cities. And if you go to David Clement, the professor's record, he's got it all on videotape. But you can watch these graphs go up, like the votes go up, and then the votes go back. Now, why should the graphs ever go back? You don't lose votes. You're like taking votes away, giving them votes, taking votes away, giving votes. So this would catch that. I would. That's what they're saying.
So when you say cast ballots, you're talking about at the polls or early voting or all the included or mail-in or what's it, how do they define cast?
Cast ballot is these machines record every single ballot and a timestamp.
Okay.
So if you get the record for when every single ballot was cast, the timestamp on it, you can run it. And it makes more sense when you look at his video. If you look at a bar graph and they add votes and then votes are taken away. So it's like, I don't know how they did it, but it was, they cast votes and then votes are taken away. How many votes were there at a particular
mm-hmm.
time? And then you go back and then there's not as many votes there. It's like they're manipulating the system to try
I've
to.
Seen the audits. You watch when they do. They describe a vote, and all of a sudden you'll see a drop. What they'll do is they'll close the polls. They'll kick out all the Republican observers, and there's this huge drop for the Republican or Trump. You know, and then they match.
Yeah.
Then they have a slight lead for the Democrat or Brandon in whatever election it is, and that pattern never changes. So that's when they fix this. You can tell when they fix it because they drop enough Trump votes to go behind or drop enough Republican votes to go behind whoever the Democrat is. And then they feed in all the false votes for the rest of the election and they end up with a slight majority because they can't make it look too bad. It's funny. You never see the cheating done on a big scale. There's no landslides in cheating. Mm-hmm. You know, Brandon never won
by
a huge amount where cheating was suspected, which is what you would think in a Democrat's
and,
face.
And you know,
he would have.
Mm-hmm. Our website went down in the primary. Whoop,
mm-hmm.
went down for a little while.
How about that?
Our website mm-hmm. right here in Santa Rosa County. Yeah,
and when it came back,
in multiple
what
other places in the state.
Was it? You should be taking regular screenshots so when it goes down and comes back, you can say, well, wait a minute. Our last screenshot was a little different than this. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're living and learning, I'm telling you. But
there was
some really strange algorithms in a couple of the races that we were very concerned about. So,
yeah, they shouldn't have algorithms. Races shouldn't have algorithms.
Yeah.
See, that's another thing, too.
Yeah.
See, here's my other contention is we can make this very simple. Again, just like we talked about, paper ballots, you know, bonded counters, videotaped, no machines, and expiring voter registrations. You don't have to have a sophisticated program to clean the voter rolls. They don't do that with the DMV. They just make you register every year. They don't care.
Yeah.
So there's no cleaning of the motor rolls, you know. There's no cleaning of the vote of the car registrations. They don't have to go through the duplicate registrations. They want their money. So because it's in the government's interest to collect money, they make sure that you register every year. Well, it's in our interest to make sure that the people register to vote every year. So what's the difference?
Yep.
You know, there is no difference.
Yeah,
so the government cannot say that your voter registration should extend longer than a year when your car registration doesn't. That doesn't make any sense. What, our cars less, you know, our cars are more valuable and have to be accounted for more than people? That's absurd.
No, it's not.
But that's what they're saying. So that's my approach to it. It's motor voter registration. We'll call it registration equity. How's that? You like that?
I like it. Yeah, I do.
So registration equity says that we are equal to our cars, that the importance of our car registration should be equal to our voter registration. And to do that, they both expire every year. What's the problem?
Yeah.
So you can take your software, you can take your programmers, you can take their multimillion-dollar contracts, you can take all these people and send them home and have them go out and do a different job that needs doing, because we don't need them to do this job to fractal analyze all our voter registrations. We just need them to expire every year. Problem solved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Action Radio comes up with
if only they would listen to us. Yeah.
But see, now here's a question
10.
For you. Do you, oh, I'm sorry. How many are there?
This
we have
is
about 10
last
left. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Okay. The MVP should identify every 30 days the state's undeliverable ballot location. This is a list of voter addresses to which the Election Commission will mail a ballot, but such a ballot will be undeliverable. So, it sounds like it has some really good ideas in this fractal technology, And I know they've actually been working on it for a long time, and I'm pretty sure I know some people that are working on it. I've put out some feelers on it to find out who, you know, and I know our team is digging into this to find out who's behind it, who's, you know, does it look legitimate, which one should we be pushing, this one or the USPS one? So that's definitely some digging that we're going to be looking at.
But don't you think if registrations expire every year that the absentee ballots will expire every year? And isn't the contention, I don't know if you put this in this bill, but I think you cannot, there shouldn't be any mailing out of ballots
ever. The absentee ballots disappear every, well, we're really only voting every other year. So,
yeah.
But you do have, we did pass legislation for that. That they have to re-up every year for that they can't.
Well, good.
It's not like grandfather,
if you have to re-up
all the time.
So if you have to re-up for absentee ballots, why should you have to re-up for your registration? It's the same thing. Same issue.
Exactly.
Okay. So we've got plenty of arguments for annual registration, voter expiration and re-registration. We got all the arguments we need for that. That could even be a separate bill. If it doesn't pass this time, well, where's some of our local representatives, Michelle Saltzman and Joel Rudman, and anybody else who happens to be in the neighborhood, you know, up here in the upper west corner of Florida? And do we have any favorable people that are taking these up? No, session doesn't start. Actually, session starts today. So it's probably too late for new bills. But how far did our bill get, do you know? Did Rudman ever toss it into the legislature or no?
No.
Okay.
Not that I could tell. He did do a fifth bill. He's got two more bills. But let me look at his site, because he added another bill, and it was...
So if he didn't put our bill in, he's a weenie.
He's
a weenie. Rudman's a weenie. If you don't put our bill in, you're a weenie.
I would not go there.
You know, we have category. What's that?
I would not go there. But
I did.
I'm not
weenie.
Pleased that he didn't. I know you did.
He's a weenie. But that was a great bill. How can you not put it in? Weenie.
Here we go. I got his bill right here. He added
Rudman's
a
weenie.
Fifth bill. He's got... He has seven bills.
His last
bill was a designated safe exchange locations. I think somebody died because they were dropping their kids off with an abused spouse. I'm guessing on this.
Oh, family court. Oh, listen. You want to write a bill? I have people. I know several women that have had their kids stolen by police at gunpoint and given to incredibly abusive men. There's a national, there's documentary films coming out of this. I spent a lot of time working family law. In fact, this time I had Michael Volpe back on. I've had Sarah and Lacey and some other folks, Julia, other different women on the show. And this works the other way too.
Bill.
Men lose kids to abusive women too. So it's not just one thing, but these are people that I do happen to know that this situation is horrible. And the reason the courts do that is to perpetuate the divorce so they can make more money. I mean, the family court, divorce court is a racket. It's as bad as the election racket. You know, most of the things the government does is a racket. The Defense Department getting patents for fraudulent voting machines, that's a racket. So who's paying them? Who's paying them off to do this? Ooh, now we're really getting the deep state. See, I don't think about the rhinos and things like that. It's the deep state. There is the shadow government, and there's the legitimate government. And the shadow government rules the legitimate government. Brandon is not making decisions. Everybody knows that. He's too incompetent. Oh, did you see the meme? This is great, actually. They had someone said, what if we had a Fetterman-Brandon ticket, you know, for 2024? And they said, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Sorry.
Yeah. Now, what's up with that? Because I think that he's probably either brain dead or dead.
That's a good question. Well, then was he appointed? Was all the fraud to get him in office so that his wife could have power like Jill Biden? I mean, I want a women's point of view on these women that are married to these guys that obviously can't do the job. Why are they so power obsessed? What is it about and people say that we'll get more women in politics, they'll be more nurturing. Okay, I don't believe that. Look at Nancy Pelosi.
I know.
But what's going on here? What's going on here with these wives that are putting up obviously?
Well, she ran off to Canada. She left her husband. She ran off to Canada because
for a younger guy, or hounding her. Oh, hounding her.
I don't know. But the media was hounding her.
The media supports her. What are you talking about? How can they be hounding her?
Yeah, well, that's the story they're sticking with.
okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, the media supports it. They supported Fetterman. You know, they supported him through his strokes.
Yeah.
You know, through all his other injuries, through his incompetencies,
through his
incoherent performance in the debates. Nobody knows what he said. He obviously didn't know where he was.
What I don't get is, if he can't show up, what are the rules? I mean, and I don't know this. I need to look this
up. He can't vote.
What are the rules? If you can't show up, if you're in the hospital, how long do you get before we replace your butt?
Well,
you know what I mean?
There are cases of members of Congress, either Senate or House members, that have been flown in for a vote. They have to be there to cast a vote. If he's not there, if he's in the hospital, he can't vote. Which is actually, you know, it's good news in terms of, I mean, it's bad news for him. I don't wish him any evil. I don't wish him any harm. I don't wish him anything. I just wish he were out of the Senate because he's not qualified to be there. He's not healthy enough to do it, the job. But as far as personal,
hope
he gets taken care of. But as far as the legality goes, okay, in the Senate, he can't vote and nobody can vote for him because he is a sitting senator. He has been approved, you know, ordained, whatever they do, wave their hand in the air three times, you know, take the oath of office and you're there. So what they can do, he has to resign or be found incompetent or whatever.
How long does he get a pass for? I mean, how long do you get a pass for?
Well, actually, I wish he would stay in the hospital as long as possible because when he's in the hospital, he's not voting. And when he's not voting, that means there
are... We need them to say that he's incompetent before the beginning of August because... And I know that people are asking for verification of life.
Why August?
At this point.
Why August?
August is because they have to run a special election if it happens before August. And if they don't... It's like August, the first week in August. And they don't have to run a special election after the beginning of August. The governor can appoint whoever he wants, if it happens after the first week of August.
Oh, that's what they're going to do.
Is
the governor a Democrat? Governor's a Democrat, right? Governor's a Democrat, Pennsylvania? Okay, so that's what they're going to do.
I think so.
So they'll keep him in until they can appoint somebody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that person will have the incumbency to run for the next term. So that's how you perpetuate Democrats. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
But quite frankly, the Oz was not a great candidate. There was another much better candidate.
No.
Trump went with Oz.
No, Oz was awful. Yeah. Oz scares me.
Well, I didn't want him either. So, you know, I mean, the only way Fetterman won was the rhino.
He just seems woke. He seems very woke to me.
Well, that's why Fetterman won, because the Republican, I imagine most Republicans stayed home because they didn't want to vote for anybody. And that was the intention.
Yeah, that was one of the ones they didn't vote for on their ballot.
That was how it was rigged. Okay. Well, we got 2 minutes left. Let me tell you my Sidney Powell story. So I've met Sidney Powell. I didn't know who she was at the time. It's just this woman, you know, needed help with a couple of boxes. And this is CPAC 2018. And so I walk up, can I help you? He says, yeah, I've got to go to a workshop. Oh, okay, who are you? Sidney Powell. Okay, who are you? Well, I wrote a book, License to Lie, and all this other kind of stuff. I'm an attorney. Oh, okay, that's cool. So we start talking, and I'm like carrying there's a lot of stuff, T-shirts, books. I mean, I was carrying a bunch of stuff, right? But in the time between this is, you know, right in the front door where I saw her struggling with the stuff. Nobody else helped. It was pretty crazy. Anyway, from the time there to where she was holding her workshop, we talked. And so I had a great chance to talk to Sidney Powell. Later, I found out who she was. I was like, I know who she is. I wonder if she remembers me. So when we finally do get her on the show, I'll ask her, do you remember the guy that carried your books and your T-shirts, you know, for that workshop in 2018? So, yeah, that was me. Just like I'd like to ask Nancy Pelosi if she remembers me sitting on her lap when she was first elected to Congress when I was doing Seeing Telegrams.
Huh?
That's a true story also. I haven't told you that one, have I? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
No.
So my claim to all right, so I met Sidney Powell at CPAC. My claim to fame, when I was doing – I got in California – and I wanted to start a new life from Boston. I hated Boston, mostly winters. But it's a pretty place, but I just couldn't stand winter. So I go to San Francisco, and I'm trying to go to California to get all my pilot ratings and get in the airlines and do all that kind of stuff. Well, I didn't know that California had a huge recession. And so the airlines weren't hiring. The flight schools weren't hiring. So they weren't hiring dispatchers or other people to get my ratings to be instructed to then get in the airlines. So I've been trying this. I tried this most of my early life to do, and it didn't work out. So now I'm just going to buy a jet once Action Radio gets successful. Anyway, so I'm doing Singing Telegrams, which was actually a really fun job, you know, because I tried being...
Singing Telegrams. Okay.
Well, here's how it happened. I needed a job right away because I was broke, which is a constant theme in my life, and I need to work. And I figured, well, everybody, you know, starts off as a waiter. So I tried being a waiter, and I sucked at that. And so then I became a singing waiter because at least I have an entertainment background. And I pretty much sucked at that, too. So I was at this one place in California. It was a restaurant. Was it Charlie Brown's or something like that? Anyway, it was a restaurant with themes. So you dressed up as whatever it was, and they dressed me up as a cowboy, and they wanted to call me Buffalo Chips, and I said that's really inappropriate for a restaurant, don't you think? So I said, how about a different name? How about High Noon? So I said, why don't you call me High Noon? I said, okay, we'll call you High Noon. So I walk into a room and go, hi, everybody. And they say, hi, Noon. And so we had this running joke. And so then one time, and I got fired from that job, because Bobby McGee's, a place called Bobby McGee's, all right? This is way back in Fremont, California. So we're going back into my past. So if Bobby, we're over time, but that's okay. This is worth telling. So Bobby McGee's, so they dressed up that. And then one time, the reason I got fired was because there was it was a really busy night. And they made me wear cowboy boots because my feet already hurt, right? It's not comfortable. And so I'm running back and forth and trying to serve all these tables, which I really do suck at. I'm a terrible waiter. But anyway, this one table was driving me nuts because they'd always ask for things individually. I'd say, one person says, I want some coffee. Okay, great. Anybody else? Nope. So I go back, get the one person their coffee, take the pot back. Oh, can I have some coffee? This went on all night, right? You want to start throwing things. So finally, at the end of the night, you know, everybody else is watching this happen, and they're, you know, said, I'm trying to serve you people. I said, yeah, that table really sucks, don't they? I said, yeah, they do, but I can't say it. Okay, fine. So at the end of the night, they got dessert. Of course, they did everything, right? And so one guy says, High Noon, can you save my cake? I said, certainly, sir. I put my hand over it and said, bless you, cake. I said, there you go, sir. It's saved. And I walked away. That's when I got fired. You can't do that, apparently.
Oh, no.
Anyway. Oh, no. So then I said, well, what can I do now? So
not
I'm already
California.
Waiter.
No one has a sense of humor.
Well, no,
there
was still a sense of humor back then, but not apparently that far. So I sucked as a waiter. And so
not
then I
for
sucked
religion.
As a singing. I sucked as a singing waiter. And so I thought, I better just stick with the singing. So I found this job singing telegrams, Eastern Onion. So I go start working for Eastern Onion. And it was hysterical. I'm doing these things. I even did one on a diving board in a pool. And I'm bouncing up and down this diving board, singing and talking and improvising comedy. Everybody's waiting to see if I fell in. I didn't. You know, my big red tuxedo, but I made a big tip from that too. So here I am working like 4 days a week, you know, and two of those days only worked half a day. So Friday and Saturday were full days. They were like 12-hour days. And Wednesday and Thursday were like 6-7-hour days. And the rest of the week I had off. I made a fortune. It was really an interesting business. Anyway, met a lot of people, saw a lot of San Francisco celebrities, you know, sang singing telegrams in bowling alleys, private homes, hospitals, rooms. You know, everything, offices, you know, everything you can think of, churches, you know, I was there. It was hysterical. And one time, 1987, in the fall, around November, election time, right, this woman won this election for Congress. And they said, Greg, you know, you're going to go do a singing telegram. There's a new woman who just got elected. Oh, great. Okay. What's her name? Nancy Pelosi. Okay, fine. No problem. So that's who she was. I didn't have no idea, right? So this is where it gets funny. So, of course, I go to the North Beach restaurant, not the old, but the North Beach restaurant, which is the, you know, classic restaurant in North Beach in San Francisco. So I go in there, my red tuxedo, and this little singing monkey with the cymbals and the whole bit, right? And so, it was pretty funny. But I will never forget those big brown eyes of hers as long as I live. Because I'm doing the thing, walking in, introduce myself, plunked myself in her lap, put my arm around her and said, hey, babes, welcome to Congress. I'm your congratulations singing telegram. Oh, it's hysterical. Now, of course, there's a million pictures of this, right? But I've never seen one. So one day when I get, you know, hugely famous, I'll say, hey, was anybody there at Nancy Pelosi's, you know, congratulations, victory party at the North Beach restaurant in San Francisco in 1987? Because I'm in her lap. Okay. And so that's how close I've been to power. You know, I had no idea she was going to be Speaker of the House, but I've always, you know, I'm so conservative, I didn't want to go to her office and ask because it might be embarrassing for them. But somewhere, somehow out there, someone's got a picture and I want to get it and put it in a frame. So that's how I met Nancy Pelosi, in her lap, in your victory party.
You can put that online. I bet you'd have a picture soon.
Yeah, someone, whoever's listening, well, you know, our California contingent, it's out there. You know, somebody, there's a bunch of people that took pictures because that was funny. So, yeah. So I'll put that on my website one day, me sitting in Nancy Pelosi's lap. I think I was like 27, you know, so I was a young guy. But so this is why
she was like back then.
She was actually nice. She thought it was pretty funny, but she was a little shocked and horrified. But that's okay. I understood. But that was part of the, you know, that was part of the celebration. You know, that's, yeah.
Exactly.
I had a job to do. I had a singing telegram to do.
They did that on purpose.
The audience loved it. The audience went nuts. It was funny. The whole restaurant's now involved in this. They all came over. Yep, warm, sunny day, sunny afternoon. Yeah, I'll never forget. Anyway, those are my adventures. So I bring all of these talents to Action Radio. That's where they all come from. Good report. This is fun. Keep doing what you're doing. And let's see if we can
see
what happens in the legislature. Any predictions for what bills might pass as far as election integrity?
No idea. There's somebody said that there's a pretty good bill that is an election integrity bill that's coming out, and I haven't seen it yet. I need to look through all the bills because if this is the last day that they could put them in, it should be in. But Remus has two more bills he can put in, so I don't know.
Yeah, call up the weenie and see if he'll put our bill in. I'll call up the weenie.
Two more things. Something else I wanted to tell.
No, go ahead.
And this is on the medical side.
Mm-hmm.
I have been doing some research and talking to some docs about what will help with those fibrous clots.
Mm-hmm.
And they said
that
there's two over-the-counter drugs that actually help to break down these fibrous white clots. But, I have to put in my disclaimer, talk to your medical professional before you ever take them. So, natokinase and lubrokinase, and they're on the website. Natokinase, NATTOKINASE, and lubrokinase, LUMBROKINASE. And these help to break down fibrous clots. They're saying that the aspirin isn't touching these hard fibrous clots. It won't break them down. So
aspirin won't work.
Talk to your medical professional.
Yeah, because they take aspirin if you've had major heart surgery, right? They say.
Helps us in your blood, and it might help save your life if you're having a heart attack if you chew it and put it underneath your tongue. I leave some of that baby aspirin in my purse all the time, and you need it at least 325 milligrams, I would guess. At least chew it and stick it. It'll absorb better if it's underneath your tongue. But that might save your life to get you to a medical professional if you're having a heart attack. It might help. But nitroglycerin is probably a whole lot better if you really have heart problems.
Well, how many heart attacks are being caused by COVID shot blood clots these days? Is that being looked at all?
No one's looking at it. It doesn't appear. So, it's just such a massive conspiracy. But if you have taken the shot and you are worried about it, make sure that you and yours know CPR, and that if you have an AED, use a defibrillator. I would get one. Have it around the house. Y'all are all vaccinated. Too many people are the SADS. They coined SADS, the sudden adult death syndrome, since this COVID rollout, since this COVID shot rollout. So, it's just some things that I'm actually putting into our newsletter. And as a nurse, I'm sick of these people dying that don't need to be. So we're trying to find ways to help them. And that's all I have.
No, and what's the kinase? There's a lot of drugs that have the ending kinase. Where does that come from in the medical literature? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Because a lot of drugs have it.
I just found out about these. Yeah. But these help to break down fibrinous. If you look them up, they're over the counter, and they do say they break down fibrous tissue. So,
let's look up kinase right now.
Dissolve it more. I would be worried that they make chunks, and then you get a stroke from that. But it says it dissolves them, so that would be much.
Oh, it says kinase inhibitor
break
drugs.
Up into pieces.
Kinase inhibitor is a new class of anti-rheumatic drugs, PubMed. The SYK-seq inhibitor. Fostem, superior to placebo, phase 2, right? Popular kinase inhibitors. Kinase inhibitors are used to treat cancers such as leukemia, breast cancer, melanoma, lung cancer, and renal cancer. That would be kidney. They are also used in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis and to prevent organ transplant rejection. They work by stopping cancer cell growth and preventing the spread of the cells. So a kinase is a cancer drug, it looks like. So how would that help blood clots? Or does it stop the vaccine from doing what it does to enhance cancer?
Okay. What I found was that it says, it's a naturally occurring fibrolid, I can't say this word, F-I-B-R-I-N-O-L-Y-T-I-C, fibrolytic, which breaks down fibrin in clots. It's about four times, it's about four times more potent than plasmin, P-L-A-S-M-I-N, as a fibrolinic. which the body makes to break down fibrin.
So are these clots fibers or are they clots? A clot to me seems like a whole bunch of cells that have, because like when you have a scab, that's a clot. That's, you know, the blood is forming a solid. So
a clot to me is red. It's red and it's soft and it's pliable and it's not hard and white and fibrous.
But it can still clog up your smaller, yeah. But your smaller arteries, veins, and capillaries especially are going to be clogged up.
Oh, it'll clog up the big ones. It'll clog up the big ones too. They pull them out in 6-foot lengths out of people.
6 foot now?
All connected. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So they're forming fibrous network. So they're forming an entire fibrous network in your body. Well, that would kill you. Stop all your blood flow.
It has killed people. What I worry about is that they're talking to all these people and they're getting cremated and they're not doing any autopsies.
Of course not. You got to hide the evidence. It's like Waco. Why do you think they bulldoze the bodies into the ground? They want to hide the evidence. We're going to start talking about Waco too, maybe not on your report. But the 30th anniversary of the government massacre at Waco was April 19th, Patriots Day. What a surprise, of 1993. And this is 2023, so it's been 30 years. And so we'll talk a lot about that. I remember every bit of that. I said, they're going to kill those people. I knew it. You could see it coming because governments can't lose. They got to show their power. And they called it Operation Showtime. And so that's going to be a big thing to talk about as time goes on. I'll be doing probably a whole week of specials on that around April 19th, which I usually do anyway, but this week's different. This year's different. Yeah. So if you get a chance.
I kind of feel like with so much information is like coming out like a fire hose.
Isn't it great?
I spend so much time researching. It's scary and it's frustrating and I don't know.
Yeah, but you're not alone. Look how many other people are doing the research. This stuff is popular. These things are popping up on search engines because everybody's looking for them. So that's the good news.
Well, the good news is that I found a lot of people to trust and found a lot of people that are on the right side. And that's the part that I absolutely love.
Well, they united the opposition, the idiots in government. They're killing off
the compliant. They've united the honest people and got them off the couch. This is the good part.
So stop listening to talk radio and come to Action Radio. We need your help. So if you want to do something, if you want to sit there, listen to talk radio. If you want to do something, if you want to make change, if you want change, you have to make change. And that's what we do here. Yeah. Let me call Robin's office.
And the people who are still sitting on the...
Yeah, go ahead.
People are still sitting on the couch. That's exactly why our country's in the shape that it's in, because people have sat there. And I'm guilty as well. I mean, it's 2020 is when my foot woke up. But
Well, not anymore. No, you're doing what you should be doing. Yeah. But we got a bill in Santa Rosa County to get rid of illegal aliens, and yet the city council of Milton won't take it up. The county commissioners of Santa Rosa County won't take it up. And this is supposed to be a conservative area. This is the one area where they should take it up, and yet they're not doing it. That's why I wrote that rather blistering article in Critique, which you can get a chance to take a look at and share with your groups. Should be interesting.
Okay.
Next week, let's find out those drugs, kinase, see what those inhibitors are, and find out just how bad, whether these are actually forming, if there's something in the jab that allows these things to form such massive clots and makes them fibrous. Because if they're fibrous, they're harder to break down. So not only are they clots,
and no one was finding these until after the rollout of these shots. So, they have to be. And I stopped believing in coincidences,
They're right in it.
Well, another thing that I also found out, too, is that in the 70s, way back, when you and I were growing up, and there one in 2,000, they called this alarming, that one in 2,000 kids had autism. And that was alarming. And today the CDC says one in 44, and they're not alarmed by it. They're not like pediatricians aren't screaming at the top of their lungs. We have pediatricians right now getting a $400 bonus for every 2-year-old that's fully vaxxed. That's on Blue Cross and Blue Shield. It's on the site. You can go look on our website on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, there's money. That would be a great report for next
week.
People
into getting the,
If you want to talk about the reimbursements of pediatricians and other doctors, how much money are they getting for these jabs? Because they don't have any liability either. If Big Pharma doesn't have a liability, they don't have liability. And the government's mandating it anyway, so they don't have liability. So it's like the circle of non-liability. But if you can follow the money on that, that'd be a great, you know, so if you make a little note, please, because I'll forget. You know, I have my own reports to do.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that next week. Let's talk about, let's make it a medical freedom report. And let's follow the money. Let's see how much money that these people are making. $400, you know, times how many kids do they see? I mean, let's kind of chart that out a little bit and see what you come up with. That'd be fascinating.
Well, how many two-year-olds? How many up to two? You get it for a two-year-old. So
how many,
yeah,
how many two-year-olds?
They want.
Yeah, how many two-year-olds does a pediatrician vaccinate, a typical one? You know, how many vaccines are they getting? How much money is this? You know, $400
And why aren't these pediatricians screaming about this? One in 44 of autism. Mm-hmm. Why aren't they screaming at the top of their lungs? Why are we not researching this better? Why are these kids still getting these shots? We don't know which one of these is causing it, so we need to stop them all until we figure it out.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
I mean, they're giving the newborns hepatitis C the day they're born in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want it, they give you a really hard time. I'm telling you, if
I
have a baby right now, thank God I'm not. Well, you don't let the kid leave the room. You don't take your eyes off of that baby because they're going to give him a shot.
No, we were right there when it happened.
Sorry.
You know, my ex and I were right there. They gave her, and they didn't tell us that they snuck in an extra vial. And I was looking at this going, But, you know, I didn't know enough then to read them all. But if, first of all, I wouldn't get shots again for anybody. But if I ever did, I'd read every vial, everything, and make sure it was what they said it was. But they snuck it in, you know, so they just, they didn't care.
You don't
they just
give
did
them,
anyway.
Don't give them any. No vaccine for anybody.
Well, we left that health program. That was Kaiser Permanente of California, if anybody's interested, that they violate your instructions. They don't give a damn what you say. So we left that minute. As soon as I found out that they'd given a vaccine or a shot that I did not approve of and my future ex did not approve of, we're actually working together at that point. So things were pretty good. But we both were unified completely in that we were leaving right then and there. I said, give us the papers. We are canceling this plan right now. You lied to us. You purposely did something we told you specifically not to do, and we can't take it back. You've already done it. You know, I said, we're out of here.
Yep.
We're never coming back. And told everybody else we knew about it. Of course, I have a bigger audience now. You know, but Kaiser Permanente, you know, you want to come after me and sue me? Go ahead. Go for it. You know where to find me. Okay.
Yep.
Got it out of my system.
Okay. I'm writing myself a note for next week.
Yeah. Pediatricians, follow the money, sacrifice the kids. That'll be the title of the show. Send me an email.
If I find some good information on it.
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to write that down. I like that. Follow the money, sacrifice the kids. Put that down for next Wednesday. Isn't it still fun we have here? This is like a laboratory of creativity. You know, so let's go. Pediatricians,
yep.
Pediatricians. That's Wednesday the 8th.
Yeah, that's it.
Pediatricians.
Yeah.
Follow the. That's about a dollar sign. Dollar sign, sacrifice the kids. So this is some of the titles.
Okay. And I want to say happy birthday to my grandbaby. She's going to be 5 this week.
Happy birthday to you.
Thanks.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear.
Adeline.
Happy birthday to you. So now you can send
and my phone. Mom, she would have been, mom was born in 28. My mom and my granddaughter have the same birthday.
Oh, well, isn't that interesting?
My mom, she passed.
Wow.
She passed in 2010, but she's an angel when she was
she?
Born. And I know, I swear she did. My
How
mom
was,
she? Was, she was born in 28. So I don't know. I don't math without a calculator.
Well, 28. Let's say 30 would have been 70.
She was born
years.
In 1928.
Now 23. So from 30 to the turn of the century would be 70 years. I did this. I do math. I grew a bit, right. So 70 plus 23 would be 93. Plus two, it should be 95.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah, not bad.
She was awesome. I got really lucky. Yeah, the best mom ever.
Well,
but I swear she came back to make my grandbaby be born on her birthday.
Yeah, that's
she
wild.
Came back to make my grandbaby be born on her birthday.
Aww.
I swear she did. So,
yeah.
I know. Yeah. It was really fun. I'm like, Mom, you're doing this. I know you are.
My parents have to answer for their lives, and I wouldn't want to be there to see it, but that's okay. We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. Hey, listen, not everybody has, you know, a perfect childhood. I didn't. But, you know,
exactly.
because
Aww,
of that,
sorry.
It has made me
–
you know, it's okay. But it, you know, it's made me fearless, resilient, and I just don't care. You know, and people worry about bad things happening. I've already had bad things happen. You know, so I, you know, in many ways, I'm kind of immune to it. It's like I understand. And when new bad things happen, it's okay. I accept it, and I will deal with it. You know, I, here's another real quick story before we go. I was told in the same week I had a fatal melanoma and I needed open heart surgery. I had two fatal conditions that I found about in the same week. It was a bad week.
Yeah.
But I dealt with it. You know, you just deal with it.
Yeah.
I had the skin cancer went first and then they had my heart operated on. You know, so it's like you just deal with it. And here
maybe
I am.
Maybe I've kind of gone to the opposite. I think I've gone to the opposite extreme because I have parents that really care. So maybe I care too much.
But well,
my heart
that,
on my
that's
sleeve.
Very possible. Yeah. No, see, this is why I talk about independence so much. I'm like, just go ahead and do it. What are you afraid of? Don't be a weenie.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I got to call him up and see if he's taking our bill. All right. Thank you, Diane.
Okay. Thank you, Greg.
Talk to you next week.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye.
What a wild day. Wasn't this fun? Well, I played everything, so I don't have to play a bunch of stuff now. I'm just going to play our ending musical theme for today. But our website's the one you're on, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Our email, public email, greg@writeyourlaws.com. We've got our Substack with my new article on how to have 30 million illegal aliens self-deport. And that's at gregpenglis.substack.com. And, of course, our contribution site, givesendgo.com/actionradio. That'll get you going. So a little Beethoven to send us on our way. Back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time.